to speak, come to the one of the two mics in the aisles, and each time would you please give your name and address for the record? If you do desire to be recognized, as I said, the easiest way is to come down to the two mics, and I'll be able to see you. Given the lights, it's difficult to see folks in the back. Again, a reminder to the hall that all motions, be they main motions or amendments, must be in writing, must be given to me, to the town clerk, to Jan Silva sitting at the view graph. You must do that before you make your motion to amend or any other motion. If you come to the mic with something in writing that you haven't given to us, you'll be declared out of order. Has to be in writing, has to be given to us before you make the motion to amend. It's the only way we can keep track of the various motions. Registered voters are the only ones allowed to speak other than town employees. Without leave of the hall, non-residents are asked to sit in the last two rows to my left or to my right. Something we discussed at the last town meeting, if you are here because of a special matter that's of concern to you and or some of your neighbors, we ask that after the vote is taken on your special matter, not to bolt the hall. There are practical reasons for that, but in addition, if you do so, it's discourteous to your neighbors who have listened to your presentation or to your special matter, and you will have left the hall without listening to their matters. Please be reminded that our bylaws require presenters to speak for a total of 10 minutes and speakers to speak for a total of not more than 5 minutes. Kindly plan accordingly, as requests for additional time are not always granted. Unless you move in the words of the article as printed in the warrant, every presenter must tell the hall of any word changes and how they differ from the words that the voters saw in the warrant. Also, as in last session, there'll be no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like before, during, or after the time someone is speaking. And the last few items, there seems to be some misunderstanding at our last session on what a point of order is. Let me read to you the definition from Town Meeting Times of what a point of or legitimate point of order is.
You're okay.
What sets it, being the point of order, and the question of personal privilege apart from any other questions which may be introduced into the debate, is that they raise a question so important as to justify the interruption of a speaker. For this reason, it needs to be carefully defined, since some have the erroneous impression that it is merely a label which, by being prefixed to whatever the interrupter has to say, gives uninhibited license to break in and seize the floor. On a point of order, a voter may raise one or more of the following questions and no others. One, is the speaker entitled to the floor? For example, is the person a non-voter or a voter who has overstayed the time allotted by the bylaw? Two, is what the speaker is saying or proposing indecorous, frivolous, irrelevant, illegal, or contrary to proper procedure? Three, is any pending action frivolous, irrelevant, illegal, or contrary to proper procedure? A point of order may be a tactful hint from one who can see that the moderator has missed, heaven forbid, or it may be a bona fide inquiry. Any attempt to use it as a device to usurp the floor should be dealt with firmly, and I intend to do so. In addition, if your legitimate point of order is not immediately time sensitive, then you should wait your turn at the microphone. to ask your question or make your point of order rather than interrupt a speaker. Also, I'd like to encourage those who don't speak very often at town meeting or not at all to speak. Therefore, if someone else has had a microphone who has spoken once before on the issue at hand, that person may be asked to step aside in favor of someone who has yet to speak on the issue. Head counts. They take an awful lot of time to count. I ask that if you are on the losing side of a lopsided vote on a show of hands, please consider not asking for a head count. I assure you that if I have the slightest doubt of a show of hands, I will ask for a head count. Lastly, it has been brought to my attention on Thursday that a vote at our last session on Wednesday on the call of the question on the main motion as amended under Article 2 was not actually voted. Subsequently, the main motion, as amended, was voted and defeated. I asked Town Council for a legal opinion of the effect of those two actions and ask that he now share that opinion with you.
So, Moderator, pursuant to your request, I checked the appropriate statutes and the parliamentary procedure set forth in town meeting time, and based upon those documents, it's my opinion that the vote taken at the last session was valid.
Thank you. We'll now move on to Article 4, the budget. A few preliminary remarks about the budget. We're pretty much going to do it the same way that we did it last year. The first thing we do is take a motion from the Finance Committee proposing a budget that would be limited to the amount that would be required to finance the Finance Committee's budget proposal. This motion will only seek a declaration from the hall as to the overall limit on the budget. A vote in favor of the motion will not, I repeat, not bind you or mean that you have voted for the particular distribution of the total amount as set forth in the warrant. Then we will move immediately to address the budget in the usual way and finally vote on that budget. Now, before we begin, let me run over a few ground rules that we'll follow in addressing the budget. We'll first have a main motion, then a second, and we will deal with motions to amend and with questions on the budget. I will start by reading the budget in numerical order by title and ask in each case whether you have a question or a motion to amend. For example, as we go, I will say 200, public safety. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question involving 200, public safety? If someone has a motion to amend, it must be in one of the two following two forms. I move to increase 200 public safety for the sum of X dollars and to reduce 600 culture and recreation, for example, to the sum of Y dollars. The two must balance. No further statement is necessary other than your own presentation of why you think this is a good idea. The second way to do it is the following. I move to reduce 200 public safety by the sum of X dollars. No further statement about funds is necessary. A motion simply to increase a line item will not be accepted. This is so because consideration of the budget will have been preceded by a vote limiting the total amount. We will debate and vote on each and every motion to amend, if there are any. And we will arrive at the end of this process with a main motion as amended that should be agreeable to all, and we will vote on it. I now recognize Bob Jacobson, co-chair of the Finance Committee, for a general discussion of the budget.
Good evening. Before I begin my presentation tonight, I'd like to personally recognize and thank the members of the Finance Committee for all the time and hard work they've contributed over the past year. Many hours and many meetings with town and school officials and committee members during the year have culminated in our coming to you tonight at town meeting to offer our recommendation on the budget. FinCom members volunteer their time, and I can assure you they take their responsibilities very seriously. I'd like to deviate somewhat from previous budget presentations wherein FinCom goals, the budget process, and details of the budget, a summary of which can be found in the warrant on page FC7, have been reviewed by the Finance Committee, and just cut right to the chase. For the second consecutive year, the Sudbury Finance Committee is not recommending an override budget. First slide. This chart reflects the anticipated impact of the fiscal year 05 recommended budget on the property taxes of Sudbury's taxpayers. As you can see, the impact on the average home, valued at $596,200, which is up from last year's average home value of $479,000 due to the revaluation, is an increase in property tax of $102, or 1.27% over the fiscal year 04 tax level. This follows last year's 1.07% tax increase over the fiscal year 03 level. These amounts are exclusive of the 3% Community Preservation Act surcharge. In budget development discussions with town and school officials and committee members, and in its own budget deliberations, the FinCom weighed the impacts of various issues with fiscal implications to the taxpayer and the level of services provided to Sudbury's residents. In 2004, Sudbury is going through its three-year property assessment revaluation. This revaluation is having a greater tax impact on the lesser-valued homes in Sudbury. An increase in the property taxes on these lesser-valued homes will occur separate and apart from anything relating to the fiscal year 05 budget and is the result of using assessed home values as a basis on which to raise local revenues. One of the reasons that the total to be raised for fiscal year 05 is only $382,079 more than fiscal year 04 is due to a dip in the amount of debt service that needs to be funded outside of the levy limit. This dip resulting in fiscal year 05, however, will be followed by an increase in fiscal year 06. In order to minimize volatility in taxes year to year, efforts are made to try to maintain level amounts for previously voter-approved debt service outside the levy limit. That was one of the factors, along with historically low interest rates, for the decision made this past year by the LS School Committee in collaboration with the town managers and finance committees of both Sudbury and Lincoln to issue permanent partial debt on the new high school building project. Reapportionment of funds back to the town from the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School District was high in fiscal year 05, positively impacting the LS operating assessment. For those not familiar with the term reapportionment, at the end of the fiscal year, any unspent funds, interest income, unanticipated surpluses or deficits, including state aid, less any excess and deficiency funds are totaled and reapportioned back to the towns according to the ratio established for the fiscal year in which the funds remain, thereby reducing the amount needed from the towns to support the LS budget. Once the amounts are derived, these funds are then credited in the next budget process, so there's a two-year lag. Higher reapportionment helped to reduce the assessment to the town for the regional school district's agreed upon fiscal year 05 budget. In fiscal year 06, reapportionment could result in a considerably lower amount. This means that even if the regional school district's budget doesn't increase $1 in fiscal year 06, The town would be assessed a higher amount in fiscal year 06 than it's being assessed in fiscal year 05. Next year, the regional school district will be in the third year of its teacher's contract, providing for a cost of living increase of 3.5%. Benefits and insurance costs are expected to continue to increase. Special education costs are expected to continue to increase. And the LS student population is also expected to continue to grow. With all of these fiscal implications regarding the high school, the town could be looking at a very difficult assessment decision next year without further additional state aid. State aid to Sudbury and the regional school district was significantly reduced in fiscal year 04, and for fiscal year 05, we are projecting another reduction, albeit a much smaller one than in fiscal year 04. As a result of these state aid reductions and no override budgets, for the last year and again proposed for this year, the town, Sudbury Public Schools, and the regional school district have all experienced reductions in level service budgets. In fiscal year 04, there was an overall reduction in the amount budgeted for wages and other expenses as the cost of pensions, benefits, and insurance continued to claim an ever-increasing portion of the cost center's budget dollars. In fiscal year 05, while budgeted amounts for these costs have increased somewhat, amounts previously cut and some services previously provided for have not been restored. Fees have increased, some programs have been reduced or cut, and in the case of the schools, some class sizes have seen increases. Contract negotiations are ongoing with various town unions and Sudbury's public school teachers. The outcome of these negotiations could result in further staff reductions in fiscal year 05 if bargained increases wind up being greater than what has been provided for in the recommended budget. The regional school district and Sudbury Public Schools anticipate fiscal year 05 student growth of 5.6% and 2.6% respectively. No funds for this additional growth have been incorporated into the recommended budgets. A reduction in state special education circuit breaker funding, resulting from a change in the funding formula, is causing a substantial increase in special education costs at the high school. Utilities costs for the new high school and DPW building have significantly increased these cost centers' budgets in fiscal year 05. Additionally, maintenance on town-owned property and equipment has been allowed to lag and threatens to shorten the useful lives of these assets. Now, these are just some of the major factors the Finance Committee considered in its deliberations for the fiscal year 05 budget and what it sees as it looks towards fiscal year 06. The recommended fiscal year 05 budget provides for a total 3.9% increase in operating expenditures, inclusive of wages, benefits, insurance, and expenses for the town, Sudbury Public Schools, and the regional school district. This past year, the Finance Committee has heard from taxpayers with opinions running the gamut from wanting to slash budgets in order to effect tax decreases to taxpayers looking for us to provide an override option so the residents of the town can choose the level of services they desire. FinCom's charge is not to provide a list of budget options like a menu in a Chinese restaurant. It is to recommend to the taxpayers of Sudbury a budget it deems appropriate, and the budget being recommended unanimously by the Finance Committee tonight, we feel, provides for levels of service and taxes that represent an acceptable compromise formulated between the town, the schools, and the Finance Committee. We respectfully request that town meeting approve it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. We'll now hear from Maureen Valente for the town departments. She is the town manager. While we're waiting, I'd like to introduce to the hall our state senator. Pam Reeser is here with us tonight. I didn't get a chance to introduce her before because I didn't see her.
Good evening. As the moderator said, I'm Maureen Valenti, town manager. This is my fifth town meeting speaking to you on the budget. My first time was in 2000 when I was newly appointed to the position. It is still an honor and a privilege to be the town manager for Sudbury and to be able to address you tonight. When it comes to budgeting, the town manager wears two hats. First, working with the Finance Committee and the Board of Selectmen, I have broad responsibility for the overall financial health of the town. Overseeing revenues, overseeing adherence to budgets, long-range financial planning, etc., all are my responsibility. Secondly, I'm responsible for the budgets of the town operating departments, those that come under my purview. I will try to briefly cover both responsibilities tonight. On the first responsibility, broad town-wide, I want to go through three issues very, very quickly. The process of putting together the budget, the revenue we have available to us, and a quick overview of benefits, a major component of budgeting difficulty recently. Then just a few thoughts on the town budget. As Bob mentioned, the budget process is detailed in the Finance Committee section of the warrant. Just showing you these steps to let you know it's a multi-step process. A tremendous amount of time and effort goes into it. The biggest unknowns, revenues and benefits every year. Those two pieces we try to work with and narrow down as we proceed through the year. By the time we get to December 31st, we've narrowed it down somewhat. Following after that, we do get more information on revenues, and we do finish information on benefits. Finance Committee, as I said, asked for two budgets to be submitted, at least same dollars as you had last year in fiscal 04 budget, and one that allowed for 3% growth. We thought between us, in terms of the model we put together, there was a chance we would be able to put together and be able to fund that outside 3% as we got closer. It's a tremendous process, a lot of work. At the end, a carefully crafted spending plan that nearly all participants agreed was the best that could be done within the available revenues. That agreement was reached despite each cost center making difficult choices and not satisfying everyone. But they all felt that at the end, this was probably the best allocation that we could do without substantially harming one cost center at the expense of the others. As I said, a major part of what we look at are our revenues, and I've got about three snapshots just to run through. Overall, our revenues, you can see there, bottom line, they've on the overall basis up about a little less than 0.5% over 04. I'll go into some of
Ms. Tober's asked, what's the point of repeating what's already in the warrant? The warrant is not being read verbatim. Ms. Valenti has a number of points to make on the budget, and it's her prerogative to tell us about it. And she has 10 minutes to do so. Thank you.
In terms of operating revenues, those that support the operating budget, they are up 3.51%. And in terms of the debt revenue, that which we use to pay our debt, you can see the decline there in both the amount we're raising for property tax and the grants we receive from the state, basically reimbursing us for the school construction program. And our property tax revenues, again, to give that snapshot, up $1.5 million within 2.5, down a little over $1 million outside 2.5. Overall, property tax is up $552,000 next year, about 1.12%. As I mentioned, benefits is a major problem that we've been facing in terms of the growth. If you look on the left side of the chart, a five-year history and what kind of increases we've seen for benefits. On the right side, the pension. And you can see the kind of problems we've been facing there. We've been working very diligently with all of the other cost centers trying to get these costs under control. We were pleased for FY05, you see a decrease amount in how much those have grown. That was one of the things that made this year possible without really having to say we've got an unmanageable situation here. For those of you who may think that employees should shoulder more of the costs for the benefits and our pensions, I wanted to give you a quick snapshot on what happens and what the employees contribute towards their pension right now. If you look after July 1, 1996, employees hired by the town pay 9% towards their pension, and anything they make over $30,000, an additional 2% on top of that. So from some employees, 11% of their compensation goes for their own pension set aside. If you're familiar with Social Security, you know it's not anywhere near that amount. Finally, let me get to the town budget. It is a 3% increase, although you'll see here it looks a little different than that. Wages overall going up. What I do is I slice the budget differently, not just going down through departments, but I take another slice horizontally. What's going on with wages? The wages total amount we'll be paying for salaries for all employees up 1.72% over the previous year. Expenses up 2.42%. And then the benefits, you see the amount that's going up there. It's understated slightly because we're asking for capital articles, trucks, things like that, in a separate article this year. Last year they were within the budget. This looks less than 3%. There's a small amount in that article. It's just a different way of accounting and asking for them. Fold those in. We are looking for a 3% increase over FY04. And again, just to put it in perspective, the town has four cost centers, the two school systems, plus the Minuteman vocational system, and the town doesn't include Sudbury Water District or the Housing Authority or the septic facility. They are separate. It's very confusing to people. We have a very disjointed sort of governmental structure with these different pieces. The town fits into the overall structure. We take up about 26% of the total operating budget. Within that, we have six cost centers. You can see our public safety accounts for 45% and public works 22%. Add those together, you see predominantly our dollars are going to provide for public safety. Culture and recreation, another 8%. That's the library and the recreation department. Human services and general government and unclassified are the balance. Our budget objectives continue to be and won't change. Number one, protect public safety, protect the quality of life here in Sudbury, protect our assets and investments, comply with all regulations and mandates that are handed to us by the state and federal government, advance the board's goals, which Kirsten described for you the other night, continue meeting service demands that won't go away, and be able to retain the staff that makes this possible. Just an example of what we are facing in terms of the population up 13.5% since 1990. Let's look at the fire department. Same staffing as in 1990. But alarm calls are up 58%, ambulance calls up 81%. Same staffing. Police department has fewer staff right now than we had in 1990. Police calls are up 14,635 now, 139%. I could do similar statistics for almost every department. The library, the volume that is moving of books and materials, customers they are serving, all of our regulatory boards in terms of the permits and the hearings and the information coming before it, the number of projects that are moving through, the number of transactions that are happening in the finance department. All across the board, we are finding the demand for services is going up, staffing is staying the same or decreasing in certain departments, and we've been trying to hold the line on wages. You saw the amount that's going up overall throughout the town sector for FY05. On behalf of the board and myself and all this departmental staff and boards and committees, I want to thank you for the support you have shown for the town budget in recent years. I'd like to ask you to support this budget that's been hammered out after so much time and effort between the Finance Committee, the Board of Selectmen, myself, the school committees, and the school superintendents. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Delente. Next will be Bill Braun, chairman of the K-8 school system.
I have a point of order, Mr. Moderator.
Yes.
Is there a motion on the floor?
No, we're going over the budget, and then there'll be a motion after these folks finish speaking.
And there, we had the first speaker was 10 minutes, and now these are 5-minute speeches. Is that my understanding? Or is there some different procedure here for the budget than any other article?
No.
You had to have a motion on the floor, then the first speaker, which is Mr. Jacobson, got 10 minutes. Anyone else speaking, as I understand, is 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. Mr. Braun?
Yeah, Bill Braun, Cato Drive, Sober School Committee. I just want to take this opportunity to introduce John Brackett. who has joined us just this year as superintendent of schools. This will be his first budget presentation, and he will do the bulk of it. John got his undergraduate degree from Central Michigan University, got a master's in education administration from Notre Dame, and then inexplicably elected to downgrade to receive his doctorate from Stanford. John brings 30 years of management experience in both education and the private sector. He's distinguished by his effective commitment to educational excellence, sound practice, and fiscal prudence. He's developed a track record of not only of school but community leadership based on common sense, decency, and respect both given to others and earned for himself. We think that the school system and Sudbury community at large are fortunate to have John with us, and ask you to give him your attention as he presents our budget.
Thank you, Bill. I am honored to be in front of you tonight to ask your support for the budget. On Wednesday night when I was here, someone said on the way in, Brackett, they won't remember what you say, but they will remember if you're brief, so I will endeavor to be remembered. In short, as you look at the budget for our K-8 system, we are coming out of two very difficult years, and the FY05 budget is better, but it certainly is not rich. I think it is probably best described as a budget under extreme pressure. I would like to present, because Mr. Jacobson and Ms. Valente did such a great job of giving you an overview and talking about many of the drivers of the budget that affect K-8. I won't spend time on that, but I would like to just show you some trends and some benchmarks that we're working with in our system and trying to work within our budget to address and to maintain quality. The first driver and the first slide that hopefully you can see before you has to do with enrollment. LS is certainly getting the previous growth that has come through the K-8 system, but it's important to know that we are still growing. As you look at the slide to the left, that is our K-8 enrollment over the last 6 or 7 years. You'll note that our projection for next year is growing from 3,053 students this year to 3,159 students next year, a growth of 103 students and 3.4%. Where is that coming from? It's coming from, if you'll look at the slide on the left, it's coming from kindergarten enrollments primarily, although the district continues to be one of excellence, and so people are still trying to make Sudbury their home to take advantage of our educational program. But if you look at the kindergarten enrollments, in 2003 we had 290 students in kindergarten. That jumped this year by 35 students, or about 12%, and we are projecting next year another growth of about 30 students, another 9.2%. The significance of that is that those are students who are entering at the very early stages of our program and will be with us for the full 8 years, presumably, and we will need to provide for them. On this, the next slide, please. Another area of concern and interest for us that we are watching very closely has to do with our pre-kindergarten enrollments. It is we are required by law to provide educational services for students who are 3 years old or above if they qualify for special needs services. And that population, not only in Sudbury, but across the country, is escalating and skyrocketing. If you look at what's happened with this population in our own school system, you'll see that in 2002 we were servicing 22 students, and this year we're servicing 43, and there is nothing that appears to us that would mitigate that growth over the next few years. These enrollment growths, not only at kindergarten and in the preschool, but are putting pressure on our class sizes, as was previously mentioned. We do not have small class sizes in Sudbury, and as the enrollment grows, the pressure grows, and we are trying to do what we can to maintain modest class sizes across the district. Special education is also pointed out as one, and I just want to give you a couple of benchmarks about our special ed costs, not only over time, but in comparison with other K-8 districts in this area. The graph to your left is a trend of expenditures. The red chart, or the red bars, are cost per student for special education. The blue bars are the costs per student for regular education. And you'll see that while they certainly special education costs per student were growing in the late 90s, early 2000s, we have worked very hard to keep those in line, and they stayed relatively flat in 2001, 2002, and have actually gone down in 2003, and we assume that they are going to go down slightly, although we don't have final numbers for this fiscal year. These are statistics we got from the DOE. In the blue category, you'll see what our regular education costs per students are, and they have been relatively flat for the last 2 years. To the right, you will see a graph that compares Sudbury Public Schools with other K-8 districts. And it's important that we look at apples and apples. So as we look at those districts, you will see Sudbury almost all the way over to the right. The very last blue column is a state average for regular education. But you can see that our special education costs per student are certainly in line with other comparable districts, as are our regular education costs per student. As we look at this year's budget, how we're spending the budget, the graph to your left shows that the $22,683,653 budget is primarily being used to deliver services directly to students in classroom or classroom support type of expenditures. Over 82% of our budget is spent directly on special education services and direct education services. If you build in that plus transportation and plus utilities, over 96% of the budget is earmarked. So very little discretion in that, in our budget. The 3% budget that you have before us today, as I mentioned, it increases the revenues over last year by approximately $655,000. It's 3% over FY04, but it's important to note that it's only 2.5% of an increase over FY03, and that doesn't consider any correction for inflation. We have cut. It's not a level service budget. We are not funding the same program that we funded in the past. And the budget that you have before you tonight does not add back any of the $1.5 million cuts that have happened in the past 2 years. In short, what this budget is going to require, it's going to require close, ongoing management. It's going to require some creativity to make it work. And there's still a great deal of uncertainty that we're facing that is going to require flexibility as we go through the course of the year. I just wanted to say thank you to the Finance Committee. As we've worked through this process, it has been a great opportunity for me. A lot of collegiality, a lot of mutual support for all of the competing services and programs in town. Thank you to the LS School Committee and Superintendent, and to Maureen Valente and the town. I want you to know that in Sudbury Schools, we will honor your trust. We will act prudently with your taxes, but we will always keep the best interests of your children at heart. It's going to be another tough year financially, but it's no different than you or I personally. But we'll meet this challenge as we always have, and we'll continue to improve on excellence. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Brackett. For LS, we have either Eileen Blusky, the chair, or Superintendent John Ritchie.
actually, Dr. Ritchie and I have prepared sort of a tag team presentation. We will keep it brief. I'm Eileen Glovsky, Thompson Drive. We're going to split this up into the economic realities that are facing us and the educational impact of those economic realities. First, the driving forces that are facing us. Like the K-8 schools, we have a continued increase in enrollment. We're topping about 15% over the last 3 years. We're looking at an additional 80 students, approximately 5.6%. Next year, the number of students who went through the Sudbury Public Schools are now at the high school, and we are doing our best to provide services for them. In a perfect world, it would require an increase in teachers, one in each academic department, and an increase in textbooks and supply budgets, but rest assured, we are not increasing either of those things this year. In fact, we will be cutting staff and continue to cut our departmental budgets as well. We are looking at increased operating costs for the new building. Given the increase in enrollment, the new building is a larger building, approximately 36% in square footage. We're switching from a gas, mostly electric HVAC system in the anticipation of perhaps moving to a year-round system at some point in the future. And we're moving from a post-World War II technology-based building into a building that is built for the 21st century of technology, and there will be some additional impact on our electricity costs because of that. I think Bob Jacobson talked about the special education circuit breaker pretty extensively, but that did impact us in FY04 to the tune of about $200,000, and we're expecting to have continued impact on us next year. Transportation, we are required as a regional school district to provide transportation for all students. Unfortunately, we are prohibited by law from charging for that transportation. Transportation used to be reimbursed at about 100%. It's currently being reimbursed at about 27%. Our enrollment increase over the last 10 years has been pretty significant. I think that this chart shows you that. We don't anticipate the enrollment changing anytime in the future. Again, we're looking at approximately a 6% increase for next year. The economic climate that we're operating in isn't that much different than last year. We have reduced state funding in our Chapter 70 aid. Our transportation aid, again, has gone down. Special education circuit breaker is not being fully funded by the legislature, though. That is not the legislature's fault. They were given bad information from the Department of Education in terms of how many students would be requiring that. We have reduced federal grants that are affecting us on an ongoing basis. And in terms of local funding, this is the third year in a row that we are coming to you with a below-level effort budget. I think the most important chart that I have to share with you is the state's commitment to education. You can see that Chapter 70 aid, the increases in funding that came to the town of Sudbury during the 90s was fairly extensive, which is the commitment to ed reform. That has leveled off and, as you see, has decreased significantly. We, as a school committee, are left with several choices. We can ask for an override, which is shifting the expense from the state to the property taxpayers, or we can reduce the budget. We have done our best to continue to reduce our budget requirements, and Dr. Ritchie will speak to you about what the impacts of those reductions will be.
Thank you, Ms. Glovsky, and thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is John Ritchie. I'm the superintendent principal here at Lincoln Sudbury, and I will be brief as well. As Ms. Glovsky has indicated, obviously the overall economic climate in which the school is operating, in fact in which we are all operating, has been gloomy for some time now and has had clear and palpable effects on the quality of the services and programs that we're able to provide at Lincoln Sudbury, and I just want to talk for a minute about what those effects have been. But I want to make clear before I do that these comments are in no way intended to disparage or question the support that we've gotten from this community and Lincoln over the years, because both Sudbury and Lincoln have been tremendously supportive of this high school. So I'm really describing more the effect of the various economic engines and that they've had on our program here. I continue to be confident that LS remains one of the few truly outstanding high schools in New England. I would argue that it's one of the truly outstanding high schools, in fact, in the nation, but that might be overselling us, but I really think this is an outstanding school. I'm deeply concerned, however, about our future if we continue to lose resources, as we have been in the past few years, because these begin to corrode, as I say, the quality of excellence that we are able to provide here. What I'd like to do for a moment is talk not so much about numbers as about core values. When we prepare our budget, we use a set of operating guidelines, and these are all intended to support some fundamental core values. Making classroom teaching and learning our first priority is something that we do every year. What we do is save classroom teachers and try to maintain class size at an appropriate level first. That seems to me to be our fundamental mission. Not that other parts of our program are not important, but that's where we begin. Even with that first step, what we've seen in recent years is that that mission has been eroded somewhat. I think you've read and heard about the increase in class sizes at LS, which have reached in some areas what I consider to be unacceptable levels. I think for a high school of this quality to have 28 or 30 students in a class is just too many. We've been able to balance that in some areas by having slightly fewer students in other classes, but the number of classes that have risen to that level is, to me, very disturbing. I won't go through the other goals, but let me just stop for a minute and talk quickly about our core values, because these too, I think, begin to be eroded, again, not by your failure to support us, but rather by the overall economic climate in which we exist. The promotion of cooperative and caring relationships between students and adults is a hallmark at LS. I think anybody who's had kids here or who has worked here or who knows anything about the school knows that what we value most highly is developing relationships between students and teachers. What's happened as our school size has increased, but more specifically as class size has increased and the number of students teachers teach has increased, is those cooperative and caring relationships simply can't exist at the same level as they had in the past. Teachers have too many students to be able to track them down, develop relationships with, follow through, meet with. They can't do it to the extent that they have in the past. So that, as a core value, seems to me under some threat. I think we remain a place that has tremendous respect for human differences and will continue to do so forever. That is another of the hallmarks of the school. But the third one relates also to the first, which is this is a place that values excellence above all else. And it is a school that sets out to be as absolutely first-rate and excellent as it can be in every area. When we don't have the resources to support that excellence, when teachers have too many students to be able to follow as closely as they'd like, when our athletic programs begin to get cut, when support programs that we need to offer for our most either reluctant learners or kids who really have trouble in school, when those things are reduced, we lose our commitment, not our commitment to excellence, but our ability to implement a system that is as excellent as can be. Those things have me deeply concerned. Not so much this year. We've gotten through this year, and I suspect we will get through next year without people feeling in your homes the real palpable effects of this, but this trend really needs to be reversed or corrected if this high school is to continue providing the kinds of services that you expect. Let me give you one, the next slide, please. We can skip this. We'll get to that at the end. To demonstrate quickly where we've been over the last 3 years, as Mr. Jacobson pointed out and as everybody in this room is certainly aware, certain expenses in any budget go up inevitably and uncontrollably. Pensions and insurance, debt service, things that we can't control. Therefore, as the budget is either reduced or doesn't grow as fast as it should to keep up with enrollment, we have to make reductions in other areas. You can see just from looking at this that the net effect over the past 3 years is a reduction of $1.4 million in our services and operating budget, which is what we use as a sort of frontline budgetary item to provide services to kids. That reduction has taken place in the context, kind of next slide please, of a rapidly expanding student enrollment. And what this slide, I don't know if you can really read it, but what it shows is that the top line indicates the increase in student enrollment over the past, since 1996, which has increased something like 67%. The faculty growth, the numbers of teachers we've been able to hire, has increased by 48%. So you can see the differential between a 67% growth in student population and a 48 or 47% growth in the faculty we've hired inevitably has led to the kinds of problems that I tried to describe earlier. The bottom line, and I don't think I need to go through all of the aspects of the, or the elements of this chart, but the bottom line for your purposes is reflected, I believe, also in the warrant, which is that the assessment to Sudbury for the FY05 budget is $14,400,000. That may be the subject of debate later or discussion later, but simply as a fact that I'm presenting to you. Let me conclude by saying once again that I really do feel like this town has been tremendously supportive of this school, but I just can't, as the chief advocate for the school, can't help but point out that it is one of our most precious resources and assets, and I'm really concerned about the trend that we're in, and I hope that somehow we, the state and the federal government, can find a way to reverse this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent Ritchie. I have asked John Ryan, who is the chairman of the building committee for the new LS, to address the hall. A number of issues have arisen at a meeting I attended, as well as in the press, about the building that's going up alongside us, and I've asked Mr. Ryan to address those.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. To paraphrase an individual who addresses the nation around the time of January, I'm pleased to report the state of the building is good. It will be completed, that is, the new building itself will be completed next month. The school will move in the middle of January, shortly after the start of the new school, after the end of the existing school year. The contractor will then immediately move into this school, remove asbestos, demolish the existing building, and start work on landscaping and parking lots. Hold it there, if we could, for just a moment. The landscaping and parking lots themselves will not actually be completed, along with the softball field and the tennis courts, until December 1, when the project as a whole will be completed. But come September, when the school opens, the school will be ready, and there will be at least as much parking as there is now. It will be ready for the students, and it will be technologically advanced. But please keep in mind that this project is not just about bricks and mortar. It's about the people behind me. It's about our future mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles, grandparents, grandmothers and grandfathers, the kind of people who will devote their time, talent, and energy to their communities, their nation, and their world. But it's not just about that. Let me show you some pictures of what's inside, because this is also a community building with new and versatile facilities. It will have an entirely new theater, a new place in which to have town meeting, in which the moderator will have to count votes in a balcony. But the new theater will have as many seats as this existing auditorium. Adjacent to it, right back up to it, will be a lecture hall holding at least 100 seats, which will be technologically connected with the auditorium, so that anyone in the lecture hall will be able to see exactly what's going on in the auditorium, and vice versa. There will be meeting rooms. That's a picture actually of the stage of the new auditorium that's going up. And although there's space in the front of it, more seats will even be able to be added and will be able to probably handle more people, subject to the appropriate regulations. There will be meeting rooms. There will be the new library, which could hold obviously larger meetings, the new cafeteria, gyms, and the fitness center. There will also, although this final decision has not been made, the building committee is looking very seriously at, and will probably make a final decision on at the end of this month, synthetic fields. And the idea of synthetic turf out there is an idea that came up because of the order of conditions which was issued to this school as a result of this building project. There was no order of conditions when the original fields were built. There were no restrictions regarding herbicides, pesticides, fertilizer, or irrigation. But there are now. And those are appropriate because of the wetlands which surround the school. However, as a result of going with synthetic turf, the school district, the town of Sudbury, can save up to hundreds of thousands of dollars over the life of the fields. And that is because you can't grow grass effectively under the conditions that exist when that grass is used for high school athletics. It is extraordinarily difficult. But by using it as a capital expense and because of state reimbursement, it is possible that we can save hundreds of thousands of dollars over the next 10 or 15 years. And with respect to reimbursement, the news there is also very good. Some of you may have seen the new Democratic plan which came out of the Treasurer's office over the weekend. The Democratic plan with respect to state reimbursement has one thing in common with the governor's plan. They both guarantee full funding for Lincoln Sudbury High School. That funding is 62.5%. It is sad to say goodbye to this hallowed hall, but I would ask you to remember that next year, at the start of a new millennium, democracy in Sudbury will have a whole new venue in which to flourish. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I now recognize co-chair of the Finance Committee, Bob Jacobson, for a motion to take up the limited budget.
Limiting motions. Move that the amount appropriated under the budget not exceed the sum of $62,550,385.
Does that receive a second?
Thank you.
For presentation, Mr. Jacobson.
Oh, actually,
we can. We can go right to a vote. Is there any discussion on this limiting motion? We'll be taking the main motion under the budget next, and after that we'll be going by each category in case anybody has any questions or motions to amend. Any further discussions on the limiting motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please raise your cards. All those opposed? It passes overwhelmingly. I recognize Finance Committee Co-Chair Bob Jacobson for the main motion on the budget.
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the warrant under Article 4 in the column Income Recommended Fiscal Year 05 for fiscal year 2005. The following items to be raised as designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers. From Ambulance Reserve for Appropriation Account, to 200 Public Safety, $193,372. From Free Cash to 900 Unclassified Benefits, $1,146,292. From Abatement Surplus to 900 Unclassified Benefits, $684,566. From Retirement Trust Fund to 900 Unclassified Benefits, $25,000. A sum of $4,626,464 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to item 900, employee benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $7,505,485 to be expended under the direction of the town manager.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. There is. I'm now going to go through each category. If anybody has a motion to amend or a question, please raise your hand. First question, are there any motions to amend or questions on schools, either K through 8 or LS?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Holliker.
Yes.
Mr. Holliker handed me an amendment. Before you move it, let me just make a few statements and perhaps you'll change the wording in your motion to amend. We deal with a bottom line budget with respect to LS. So rather than take money from a particular category, your motion should be that I move to reduce the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School bottom line total budget by X dollars.
Okay.
X would be that number you have in the letter that you handed me. Is that acceptable?
Yes.
Let me rephrase it, and then you can say so moved. Do you wish to move to reduce the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School total budget by $554,788?
Yes.
So moved?
So moved.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Holliker for a presentation.
Basically, what I'm proposing is to make, can you put the transparency up? What I'm proposing, essentially, or the intention, is to make interscholastic sports self-supporting. We have heard a series of gloomy reports, gloomy, about the future of tax-supported activities in this town. And I think that I can offer to you a modest proposal that is actually win-win for everyone. You might call it pay-as-you-play. But essentially, I'm proposing that the athletics budget and the coaches' trainer budget be eliminated, and that interscholastic sports be entirely self-supporting through participant fees, gate receipts, etc. Now, I have some. I have four rationales. For this, the first is one that I'm sure you're aware of. The town is under no obligation or mandate to support interscholastic sports by taxation. And I also point out in two that among the kids' sports activities in Sudbury, as far as I know, the high school interscholastic program is the only one that's supported out of tax money, except for the provision of fields and facilities. The most important points, however, I think are three and four. The high school sports are already partly supported by participant fees in the amount of $150 per person per sport. That'll be for next year, up from $125 this year. A fee of about $350 per person per sport would entirely support the program. And that's not a precise figure, but somewhere in that vicinity would be sufficient to support the program entirely. And I submit that a fee of $350 in that range is not overly burdensome, given the relatively high incomes of families in Sudbury and the ability of high school students to earn money or save their allowances. To put this into perspective, I should point out that each student is supported by Sudbury to the extent of about $10,000 per year in schools. So Sudbury does make a very major contribution. And it seems to me that a return of something of the order of $350 per student per sport is not unreasonable. One advantage of this is that it would remove sports as a driver for the high school budget. In other words, other things would drive the budget. Number of students, the classroom size, maybe laboratory facilities or something like that. But this proposal would remove sports as a driver for the high school budget. The size of the interscholastic program in sports could increase or decrease without affecting the overall high school budget. And finally, I should perhaps point out that if the students paid somewhat more for their privilege of participating in interscholastic sports, they might accrue the virtue of enterprise in addition to the other virtues that people imagine accrue to students by participating in sports. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee wish to make a statement in favor or opposed to this amendment?
The Finance Committee is not in support of that amendment.
Thank you. Selectmen have a statement they'd like to make?
The Board of Selectmen do not support this amendment. We feel very strongly that the high school experience is a combination of athletic and academic experiences. And anyone has any children who's gone through the high school will realize the quality of academics and athletics really makes a well-rounded student, a well-rounded person. It teaches our young people what life is all about. And I think to eliminate athletics from the high school is totally inappropriate, and I think it sends a bad message to the youth of this community that the mothers and fathers of this community don't support the young folks of this community. I think it's a terrible, terrible precedent, and it would be black in Sudbury's I in the community of communities strongly oppose this.
Thank you. I recognize at the mic Mr. Blacker.
Lawrence Blacker, 15 Country Village Lane. I second exactly the statements and sentiments of Mr. Drabinski. I had twins that went through the high school many years ago. They weren't identical. One was a boy, one was a girl. And my son participated very heavily in athletics. And I can assure you that but for the athletics, he never would have gotten through school. He had subsequently gotten through college, played Division I sport, married, has no children, and is doing very, very well. And it was the athletics that really kept him going.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As someone who's attended town meetings in this building for off and on for 30 years, and as someone who was a woefully unsuccessful athlete at Lincoln Sudbury and an only moderately successful student, perhaps it's appropriate that my first presentation is in response to my good friend from Concord Road, Mr. Hollicker's presentation on athletics. And maybe I can give you a little bit of history of the finances of athletics here at Lincoln Sudbury. The school opened in 1956, and we have had interscholastic athletics at Lincoln Sudbury since that point in time. Back 30 years ago, the first public meeting I attended in this building, there was a caucus in which John Kerry first expressed his interest in public office publicly in this district and chose not to run for Congress as a result of a caucus here. Later on, in the mid-80s, Mr. Hollicker was gracious enough to host a party for me across the street during a political campaign in 1988 when we were experiencing the Massachusetts miracle, and at that point in time, we still had no fees for athletics at Lincoln Sudbury. So throughout that entire period of time, 1956 until 1988, we did not charge one fee for athletics. And we didn't for, I believe, a fundamental reason. Because we believed, as Mr. Drabinski has said and as Mr. Blacker has said, that there's more to the educational process than what goes on between the four corners of the classroom. Sometime after 1988, after we experienced an economic downturn, after the state turned the spigot off, we decided that we might go forward and we might charge a fee for athletics. Fundamentally, I believe it's an inappropriate action. I believe that it is detrimental in many respects. And let me bring you back to a little more historical and personal perspective. I am the second of seven children. At the time that I played here, I played a number of sports. My siblings were interested and played a number of sports. If we charged a family of seven children $350 a sport, if they played three sports, you'd be approximately $1,000 per student. So if there were three children here, Mr. Blacker noted that he had twins who were here, I believe, at the time. If they played three sports, they'd be talking about $2,000. So the question which Mr. Hollicker, my friend from Concord Road, raises is a question about the fundamental importance of athletics, I believe, in our operational budget and our educational mission. It's a question, it's an important question, a question perhaps that should be raised in the course of a campaign for school committee. It's a question perhaps that could be raised in another forum, not in a forum where we have 5 minutes. For discussion on the issue. So I would urge you to vote against the amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Coe, did you play high school sports?
No, Mr. Moderator, I didn't. I was far too small and slow. But I did participate in other interscholastic activities. I was in band competitions. I was on the debate team. And I went to football games and basketball games sometimes. And I think that one point that, you know, I'm one of the older people in this hall, but I remember not only when my kids were in high school, I remember when I was in high school. And I'll be going to my 50th reunion next year from high school. And one of the things that I remember about the high school experience is that a lot of it is pretty boring. And some of it is, you know, you go through it because there's a lot that you have to learn, but not everything that you have to learn is all that interesting at the time. And the extracurricular activities do provide a welcome relief and help keep the kids focused on what they're doing and give them some opportunity to get to know each other in a other than the classroom setting. And I just think that this is probably not the way to do it. And if you think that they'll stop at athletics, the people that propose these things are probably not going to stop there. They're probably going to make the same attack in a couple of years on other extracurricular activities like band and orchestra and things like that. So I think that it's not that I think that necessarily Lincoln Sudbury is the most frugally run institution in the world, but I don't think that slicing this, making this kind of slicing off of athletic activities is the right approach to deal with that. So I urge defeat of this article or this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Coe. Yes, sir.
Adam Miller, Knobscot Road. I went to high school more recently than a lot of people in this hall, and not in at Lincoln Sudbury, but I remember athletics generally as a really negative aspect of high school, and I really was never able to find a connection between the athletic program and the other overall goals of the high school program, and I feel that it should be the athletic program should be self-supporting if we have them at all in the high school. So I support this amendment to make the athletic budget self-supporting.
Thank you.
I move the question, Mr. Moderator.
Is there a second?
There is a second.
Do we have it on the view graph?
Well, let me read it while we're waiting. It's this is the amendment, the motion to amend that was moved and also seconded, and that's the question that's being called.
The motion is as follows. I move to reduce the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School total budget by $554,788. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by raising your cards. That's a wonderful point of order. Yes, we will now vote on the question. All those in favor of voting on the main motion, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed to calling the question. Okay. The question's been called. It was seconded. That's what we just voted on. Now we're going to vote on the main motion. The motion to amend. Sorry. Thank you. All those in favor of the motion to amend as read, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed to the motion to amend, it is overwhelmingly defeated. Are there any other, we're still on schools, K through 8 and LS. Are there any other questions on schools?
Yes, sir. Thomas Holliker, Concord Road. In information that I received from the Lincoln-Sudbury School Committee, I understand that two line items were omitted from the budget printed in the town warrant. I don't know whether that's relevant at this time or not.
FinCom know what the question is, or does Ellis prefer to take that question? FinCom? LS, do you know what Mr. Hollick is referring to? Could we have someone from LS answer the question, please?
I could name those two line items.
Why don't you do so? Mr. Hollick is going to name for us the two line items that he thinks were missing from the budget.
One is entitled Less Estimated Receipts, and I think the other one is Net Operating Budget.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hollick.
I don't have a view graph of this, but
that's okay.
Give this to you if you want.
Why don't you give it right here to Jan Silva? Does Ellis still wish to discuss it, or do you have an answer? Dr. Ritchie will answer the question.
Mr. Hollicker is correct that in the last two lines on page, I'm not sure what the page is, through no one's fault, it was just a matter of printing the two bottom line items, estimated receipts and net operating budget, were left out, but the bottom line figures given in the overall budget are accurate. I don't know what else to say.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Kirsten Van Dyke, 37 Landham Road. I have just a really quick question regarding the operating costs. There was a reference.
Are we talking about LS or?
LS, yes.
Okay.
It was in regards to switching from gas to electric for the HVAC. Just a very quick explanation. I'm rather confused. I've always thought electric was a lot more expensive. And then there was an indication that there may be a future plan that would accommodate that switch. Are you referring to maybe a geothermal heating system of some sort?
The new building will be electric-based, but it's a heat pump system. And actually, that's another part of the good news. The building is energy efficient that we understand we will be getting rebates back from NSTAR. We don't have all the rebates yet. We don't know the full amount of them, but it could be a couple of $100,000 or so. And because of the energy efficiency of the building and the concept of a heat pump system, which is electric-based, is you take the cool air, when you need cool air, you take it where it is and move it to where the air is warm, and when you need warm air, you take the warm air and move it to where the air is cooler. So that in the winter, in a building, you often probably know, cool air builds up along the edges of the building, next to the windows and next to the facades, whereas it's warm in the inside. The concept of the heat pump system is to take the air in the inside and circulate it to the outer portion of the building, keeping an even heat throughout the building and reducing the amount of noise that the moderator will have to put up with at town meeting. And then in the summer, when the air conditioning is on, you can take the cool air and bring it out to the exterior as well. The concept is to bring that air out to an area without having to recool it in the summer or reheat it in the winter. So it's a different kind of system and obviously it exists in this building, which is 50 years old.
Thank you.
Hey, Ms. Ryan. Yes, Mr. Tober.
Yes, moderator. You'll have to help me because I get a little confused here. I wanted to insert, I wanted another item in the table on page 5 of the warrant. And I have thought that we should have in there an item called refund. I've got an idea. I'd like to talk about it. Can I go to the...
Hang on. Page 5 of the warrant is Article 4, which we're currently on the budget. And you wish to talk about a tax refund of some kind?
Yeah. No. A refund from the... from the town to the taxpayer. May I talk about it out there?
You want to talk about some kind of refund by the town to taxpayers?
Yeah, may I?
Hang on, Mr. Tober. I'm going to rule that that's not within the four corners of the budget article. If there's something else you want to do, we can talk about that, but what you just suggested is outside the scope of this article.
Because it's not there, and that's a mistake. I want to argue that, if I may, please.
No, I'm afraid it's outside the scope of the article. It may be a mistake, in your opinion. What I would suggest is that you bring it up early to the FinCom and suggest some mechanism that they might have next year to do that. But at this juncture, with the warrant printed and the budget before us, we couldn't discuss some kind of refund in either general or specific terms that the government could give the taxpayer.
Well, I didn't have time to go to the FinCom, and I'd like to expose this audience to my idea. Can you let me do that?
I'm afraid you can't, Mr. Tober. In conjunction with this discussion, it would be outside the scope of this article. I can recommend that you can write a letter to the editor in the newspaper, and folks can read it and see if they agree with you, and then you can do something about that. But that specific statement that you're making is outside the scope of this article. So I'm not going to be able to entertain that.
I object the way that you... That you prevent me from telling these people something which they ought to hear.
We're talking about the budget, whether to increase some item or decrease some item. You're not speaking about either one of those two things.
Yes, I do. I want to... It's just that it is not complete.
Excuse me?
It is not complete. It needed another item, and I would like to show that.
Mr. Tober, you have 1 minute to show us that you're not outside the scope of this article. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry for getting old and having difficulty reaching this place. Mr. Moderator, the teachers have been clamoring for a raise, and I think they got it. And I can sympathize with them. But I think they ought to share. When the FinCom puts together its budget, it looks at the revenues, and some of the revenue is new. It is the new part being due to the increase in the Sudbury economy. Now, if the Sudbury economy rises 2%, the budget, the revenue rises 2%, and the FinCom has 2% to play with. And I'm proposing that 1% go to a raise for the teachers, and 1% go to a refund to the taxpayer. That is sharing. Am I still inside the four corners of this
No. No, I'm afraid I'm going to have to rule that you're outside the scope. You have 12 other amendments that you've given me. Some of these others are within the scope of those articles. So why don't we stick to those, and why don't we pass on this one, okay?
Well, I have laid before four different voters here, so
okay.
You heard what I said.
Thank you, Mr. Tober. Yes, sir, at the microphone.
Yes, hi, Steve Murphy, Willis Road. Just two questions on the budget that are sort of interrelated between Sudbury Public Schools and Sudbury Regional High School. Part of it relates to the slide that's up. It seems that in all categories, the pension and benefits portion of the budget is increasing dramatically. You were kind enough on page 5 to present the FY02 through FY05 for comparison purposes. And clearly, under the Sudbury Public School employee benefits, there's been nearly from 02 to 05 a 70% increase in the cost of pension and benefits, from $2.7 million to $4.6 million. I'm curious if somebody could explain, since nobody took it upon themselves to address those specific lines in the earlier presentations, why, as it relates to town employee benefits, which have increased about 40% during that time period, why the school public schools benefits are so quickly outstripping even the town employee benefits. There's about a 40% increase over that same time period for the town, 70% for the schools. And when I'm looking at your in your exhibits on page FC37, it seems that the retirement program for school employees has tripled in that time period, from 262,000 or $226,000 to $676,000. I'd just like somebody to explain why that rate of increase, which is obviously very dramatic, and whether or not we should expect to continue to see those kind of increases on an ongoing basis. May I ask my second question now, then I'll sit down?
No, why don't we get an answer to that question?
All right,
and then stay right there, and we'll let you ask your second question. I call Mr. Jacobs, who's the chair of the Finance Committee.
I can't specifically answer the question, but I think Maureen Valenti might. But I think part of the answer may be in the fact that SPS benefits are really part of the town-wide benefits. It's just in the last year or two we have tried to allocate out that portion which relates solely and specifically to the schools. There really is, they're all part of the same benefits. And those, the reason why we're asking for 7.5 is the combination of town employees. The school teachers at SPS are town employees. And again, it's only been in the last couple of years that we've tried to segregate it out. So the problem may be in the earlier years that you're talking about, the allocations may not have been correct between SPS and the town, and in the last couple of years, a great effort has been made in determining exactly which benefits are non-school and which benefits are school-related employees.
Okay, thank you for that.
You all set with that answer?
Well, only partly.
Hang on one second. Ms. Valenti, town manager.
There's a unique phenomenon there to explain at least that part of the pension system. Teachers, their pension is not paid for by the town as municipal employees are. It's paid for by the state. So there's no budgetary contribution from the town for teachers. Non-teaching staff, however, at the Sudbury Public Schools are not members of the teacher system, which is paid for by the state. They are part of the same system as the town. So two things have happened, at least over the last few years. As special ed costs have risen, the number of aides and others that have had to be hired, they're not teachers, they're other professionals, they have been joining the Middlesex retirement system too. So we've seen a shift in that. The other is just a restatement on the town's part. When we realized that was going on, and we didn't at first track that separately, the assistant town manager and finance director and town accountant went back and looked and found out indeed there were many more employees, relatively more employees, who were being hired by the Sudbury Public Schools who were not members of the teacher system. So it just shows a little bit of a shift there. But overwhelmingly, their employees, we don't contribute to their retirement. The state does.
But these numbers represent town employees, correct?
Well, the line is split. We've always split the line, but we used to do it up to a few years ago in a sort of, well, like a 60-40 type, whatever we thought were the basic employment numbers. In the last few years, as costs have risen dramatically, I've asked the same staff, I said, don't just take an algorithm or a percentage, actually go in and start counting employees and looking and seeing what plan they're on, retirement plan they belong to, so that we can more accurately track these costs. And so what you're seeing really isn't so much maybe a difference in who's belonging to what or what costs are there. It's a better improvement in our ability to track that and report that according to each unit.
But should I take at face value that the numbers in this warrant article are correct for fiscal year 02 or not?
We can go back to year 02 and try to restate it. They're within a ballpark, but they're not precise.
So the ballpark is a 70% increase then?
But I don't, your second question about expecting that trend, I don't expect that. As a matter of fact, we've seen the decreases because part of the reason decreases in the health and pension is because the reduction in the number of employees. The school system did reduce employees who are the employees who would belong to that system. So, you know, depending on what the hiring pattern is, we wouldn't see that level of increase in the future years.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Second question, same topic. Generally, just point of clarification, the debt service related to Lincoln Sudbury High School from fiscal year 04 to fiscal year 05 is increasing by over $500,000, or about 33%. Are we going to see that leveling off as well, or should we expect similar increases as we start to pay for the high school?
Ms. Lente.
As Mr. Jacobson said at the beginning, the school committee went ahead and authorized, with the approval of both towns, town managers, board of selectmen, and finance committees, to issue some of that debt. So you're starting to see that. I believe we issued $14 million. I'm seeing a nod from the finance director for the schools. That leaves a significant balance out there. Is it, Carrie, do you know how much the balance left to issue? We do have, and I believe they will issue that when and if we see that the grant is coming. Oh, Mr. Ryan.
Hang on a second, if you don't mind. Carrie Spidell, do you have the answer to that question that Maureen asked? Mr. Ryan?
What happened was, as you know, the estimated cost of the building will be in the area of $70, $71 million, somewhere in there, of which 62.5% will be reimbursed by the state, which means the town would bear the share of, would bear the amount of 37.5%. I can't do those numbers in my head real fast, but the town was going to bear a cost of about $28 million. When I say the town, I mean both the towns of Lincoln and Sudbury. Because of low interest rates and because of a very favorable bond rating that the Lincoln Sudbury School District has, after discussions with the Sudbury Finance Committee and the Lincoln Finance Committee, and I believe Maureen Valenti was there and Tim Higgins from Lincoln, we had a large meeting in which we discussed what would be best for both towns in terms of borrowing, and a decision was made to borrow $14 million at this time. We knew that wasn't going to be reimbursed by the state, so there was no harm in borrowing at this time. So I think it was just recently issued. It was in October. Okay, last October, the district borrowed $14 million for 10 years. We will be paying that portion back. That represents our portion, one half of our portion that will not be reimbursed by the state. So that is what's starting to show up on the FY05 number. So that's why it's going up.
And the interest rate on those bonds?
The interest rates on the permanent borrowing is, I believe, 2.89%. The temporary borrowing is about 1%.
And that's fully amortizing over the 10 years?
That's amortized over the 10 years, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan.
Yes, sir. Mr. Gardner.
James Gardner, Longfellow Road. This is an LS question. It goes back to the utilities question. On page FC14 of the warrant, the top table, the fourth line, utilities, according to this, the fiscal 04 budget is just under $400,000 for utilities. The fiscal 05 budget is just under $600,000 for utilities, an increase of 50%, $200,000. A few minutes ago, we were told we should expect NSTAR rebates on the order of a couple hundred thousand dollars. I'm wondering if those rebates are included in this number, or if those rebates are something to be realized in the future and it's money that the town is paying out that it may not see back.
Mr. Ryan?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The rebates I referenced, I think we actually have a small piece of them. We haven't done anything with them yet because our intention was to turn to the Board of Selectmen from both Sudbury and Lincoln and to the Board of Selectmen from Sudbury and Lincoln and basically ask them how they would like it to be handled. We could easily use that to reduce the cost of borrowing those rebates. Independent of that, however, so the rebates aren't showing up in this budget. You're not seeing them yet because they haven't yet appeared. NSTAR has told us we're getting them, but I think we only have a small piece of them, and that's being held in an escrow account right now pending the discussions with the finance committees of Lincoln and Sudbury saying, how would you like this money dealt with? Do you want us to use it as part of an offset to the operating budget? Do you want us to use it to reduce the building cost? We're willing to work with the towns on what they think is best. We don't have any vested interest in what happens.
If I may, I'd just like to make sure I understand this clearly, so that the rebate is actually coming back as a check that's going into escrow now. It's not simply being deducted from the electric bill.
No, it is coming back as a check, yes. Yes, that's a check that comes back. So there's no confusion. That's a check that will come back from NSTAR.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Ryan, why don't you stay there for a minute? Yes, sir.
Steve Shigrew.
We're starting demolition fairly quickly, Mr. Moderator.
Steve Shigrew, Briar Patch Lane. I just wanted to clear up something in the discussion, two discussions ago, about teacher pensions. Teacher pensions come from teacher salaries. Teachers, new teachers now currently give about 11% of their paychecks to the Mass Teachers Retirement Board. Which then will pay pensions to teachers after they retire, if they have worked the right number of years and they have they are old enough when they retire. I didn't want the hall to go away feeling that teachers were living entirely off the taxpayers of the state. They do in fact contribute to their own retirement system the way other people contribute through the Social Security system. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on schools before we move on to line item 100, general government? Any questions, motion to amend? Seeing none, we'll move on to 200, public safety. Any questions, motions to amend? Yes, Ms. Tyler.
Is this on?
I can't hear you.
Yeah, I can't either. What do you do to turn on?
You're on now.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Quite a number of years ago, I remember that there was discussion about trying to eliminate the duplication in dispatchers. And I'm looking at this budget, and I see that we continue to have a police department with dispatchers. And it's my understanding that if you make a 911 call and you're trying to get to a fire engine or an ambulance, that the next thing that they do is transfer that call up to the fire department that then answers the phone and then sends it out. And I guess I just really, with modern technology and all the things going on, I don't understand why they're not consolidating. And if it needs, maybe it's not a cost reduction. Maybe it just means they're all in one place, so you have two people manning the phones at one time. So if there's two calls coming in, they can be answered simultaneously. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't understand why we have two different groups sitting in different parts of town answering 911 calls.
Does anyone, Ms. Valente, you can't answer that?
Currently, we don't have the physical space to be able to accommodate two side-by-side dispatch stations, the fire and the police. Many other towns around us, Concord, Wayland, et cetera, do have a combined dispatch. When we get to Article 14, when we're trying to look at a feasibility study for police, that's one of the things we'd be trying to achieve. Right now, they are independent, one civilian dispatchers at the police, civilian dispatchers in the fire. The way you described it is correct in terms of a dialing a 911, how that call is transferred. Each one, and I can think the chiefs can address this better than I can, but those dispatchers are specifically trained for the area of public safety that they work in terms of that. And I don't know of any town that has just one dispatcher at a time. So previous proposals were to create this consolidated dispatch and have two dispatchers in the same place sitting side by side, one handling primarily fire, one primarily police. But I know our chiefs are here. I don't know if there's anything more, Mr. Moderator, that might be added to the answer.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Tyler?
Well, I've actually been to the fire station every year when I get my fire permit, and I can tell you that you could put probably five dispatchers in the room that the fire dispatcher sits alone in. That's just my own opinion. Now, I've seen, you know, cubicles and companies, and I know that they kind of pack people pretty tight. So I'm not satisfied with the idea that there's not space existing. That doesn't ring to my experience as I go up there, as I say, every year for these permits.
Okay. Anybody else care to give an answer to that question? Are we all set? Okay. We're going to move on to 400 Public Works. Any questions or any motions to amend? Seeing none, we'll move to 500 Human Services. Anything there? This is 500 Human Services, Mr. Tyler?
Yes.
Sure.
I see that there's no budget for hazardous waste disposal. Does that mean that someone else is funding it and we don't have to, or that we're expecting people to just toss it in the dump?
We are certainly...
Ms. Valente?
We're certainly not expecting anyone and urge everyone not to dispose of hazardous materials in an inappropriate way. With the budget difficulties, we have looked at that, and our approach has been at this point, we're trying to get every other year an annual hazardous waste day. We did one in this particular year. In between, we send residents to the Lexington facility. At Lexington, there is a fully operational, it's a regional drop-off center for hazardous waste material. The person who's dropping it off will have to pay a fee, but that center is open as our backup in between. So there is certainly opportunity for proper disposal of hazardous materials.
I have a motion. You saw the add and subtract, right? Okay.
Services. Yes, they are.
Yes.
It is the line item for the reserve is $900 unclassified and transferred.
Yes. Okay. I move to add $30,000 to the board of the Human Services Division of Public Health. To add $30,000, of which $15,000 would be used for hazardous waste disposal. $15,000 would be added to mosquito control, and subtracting $30,000 from $900 unclassified reserve account.
Is there a second to that motion to amend? I see a second. Mr. Tyler.
I think every town has an obligation and responsibility to make it easy for its citizens to dispose of hazardous waste annually. In a $62 million budget, if it costs $15,000 to do that, we should. I think also that with West Nile virus, a continuing and increasing threat in this country, to see level funding of mosquito control is not prudent. It's not protecting public safety and our health. I think that we need a substantial increase in mosquito control, and I think $15,000 is better than nothing. And I think that we can fund this both from basically reserve accounts, and we just saw tonight that they pulled $1 million out of some free cash account and did a whole bunch of other things. And every year, if you look at the town report, you'll see that we allocate money and then it doesn't get spent. So the bottom line is this is we're not going to be cutting schools here. We're not going to be cutting anybody else's program. We're just going to do what's right. So I urge you to let the citizens of this town properly dispose of their hazardous waste, and let's protect ourselves from a new pestilence that's coming to this area. Vote these small changes to improve our quality of life.
The Finance Committee have a statement to make?
The Finance Committee does not support this amendment.
Selectman have a statement to make? Or?
Board of Selectmen do not support this amendment.
Is there a member of the Board of Health present, or the Health Director present, to address the question? No. Mr. Gardner.
James Gardner, Longfellow Road. As anybody that was here the other night knows, I don't often agree with Mr. Tyler on every particular issue, but I think in this case, I agree completely. The hazardous waste disposal is a huge problem everywhere. It's a problem in Sudbury. It's a problem everywhere in the country. And people are encouraged by default to be remiss and to dump things that count as hazardous waste into their trash without thinking too much about it if they're not given the opportunity to bring hazardous waste to an appropriate treatment center within the town on a routine basis, even if it's once a year. The education that goes along with that once a year effort to collect hazardous waste is what reminds people of the many different things that they take for granted that they just are dumping in our trash, and we really need to stop that. We need to protect the town and the environment, and having the hazardous waste available is a big need for the town. I urge people to support this amendment.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I agree with the motion for the support of the hazardous waste pickup. But perhaps the town manager can correct me if I'm wrong. Mosquito control is not administered by the town. It's administered by Middlesex County, or what's left of Middlesex County Mosquito Control Project by, I think, Mr. Henley is still the administrator. And it's the assessment is passed on to the town. And so, the regional project decides what money is spent. Now, some towns have provided additional funding under the program for additional BTI treatments, and I think that can be arranged. But the 15,000 number is our assessment.
Yes, sir, Mr. Coe.
Mr. Moderator, I guess to follow up on that, I move to divide the question and to vote on the two proposals separately.
Okay. Is it your, before we get a second, is it your motion, since as you can see from the view graph, it's we deal with bottom line budgets, and so right now it's to increase human services by 30,000. Would your amendment be to reduce that 30,000 to 15, and then to decrease unclassified by $15,000? Is that, do I understand that's your motion?
Well, as I recall, the way the motion was originally made, it included wording which said that it would go into the hazardous waste disposal and mosquito control. So now that's not reflected in the way it's presented on the board, right. But that is the way the original motion was made.
Correct.
So I don't guess I care which way it is, except I don't want to be put in a position where I'm advocating reconsideration or anything.
Correct. But hang on one moment. The answer to your question is that, and what I tried to explain to you, Mr. Tyler, is that you cannot say increase human services by 30,000 and to be spent in the following ways, 15 for mosquito and 15 for hazardous waste. I'm not finished, Mr. Tyler. You're not recognized yet.
Thank you.
And so if you want to make a legal motion, that's the form of it.
the sense of the whole, if this motion were to pass, would it be instruct the town manager and the Board of Health that that's the sense of the whole is how the money should be spent. But we can only tell them to increase the bottom line or decrease the bottom line. We can't tell them how to spend it in a motion.
Could you help me understand where in the town bylaws or our rules that say that a motion can't specifically say that something should be spent for something? I've always understood that you could. So while the town chooses to, in fact, put together a line item budget, I don't see anything in law that I understand that says that you cannot specify where you want that to be spent. And I think it's our understanding here as a town that when we pass these bottom line budgets, I hope that the town is honoring what they put in the back of the warrant saying how it's going to be spent and not saying, well, now that we got the money, let's figure out what we're really going to do with it. So if therefore my motion did say $30,000 to be used by the Board of Health, to be used $15,000 for hazardous waste, to be used $15,000 for extra mosquito control. That was the motion.
Very good, Mr. Tyler. Mr. Kenny.
Mr. Moderator, historically, the law provides that the town meeting body is a legislative body. They're not an administrative body. They can't determine how money is spent. They can appropriate funds for anything they want, but prior to the Town Manager Act, the selectmen would determine whether or not those funds were expended or not. Since the town manager form of government, there's been the town manager now determines how funds are going to be spent and can transfer funds between line items, etc., which brought us to the particular budget form that we have now. Most of the people are, the true people that are standing at the microphone will remember when we in fact did have line item budgets that were done. But even if you were to do that, the town manager can then still go in and transfer those funds. I'm not suggesting she will. I'm only suggesting that we do not have a line item budget as we did before.
Thank you. Mr. Kenny, while you're up there. So if Mr. Coe wishes to make a motion to amend, am I correct in assuming that the proper wording of that motion should be move to decrease the $30,000 in the current motion to amend to $15,000 in both categories? Would that be the correct way of his motion, as opposed to referring to mosquito control or hazardous waste?
I think you probably would have to make another motion to amend the motion that's up there because
we're about to. My question is, should Mr. Coe's motion to amend read, move to, in the current motion to amend that's before us, move to decrease the $30,000 in two lines each to $15,000? Would that do the trick?
It would do the trick so long as he indicated how you would do it. The problem,
Mr. Coe, it's just a decrease, so he wouldn't have to tell us where it's working.
Well, the problem with that is we have something up there. The purpose of his motion is to split the vote. If he took it down, his concern is that he would be doing it would be reconsideration.
Right.
If he said, I'm reducing that by $15,000 by eliminating the reason, for example, for mosquito control, then you would probably avoid the reconsideration question.
Mr. Coe, I suggest to you that if you wish to make your motion, that is the motion to amend that's currently before us with a couple of added clauses. I suggest you ignore those added clauses and instead just move to amend the motion to amend to reduce from $30,000 in two places down to $15,000.
I move to amend the amount from $30,000 to $15,000.
In two places?
In those two places.
Does that motion to amend, the motion to amend, receive a second? Thank you. Do you wish to be heard on your motion to amend, or have you already spoken?
Just one sentence. I'm persuaded by the argument on hazardous waste and not by the argument on mosquitoes.
Thank you. Anybody? Yes, ma'am.
Lynn McLean, Water Row. I just want to give you some facts. Having lived there for 42 years, no matter how much money you put into the mosquito fund is not going to help those mosquitoes that are flying all over Sudbury because the National Wildlife does not let you spray there at all. And years ago, in front of Taft and Powers, in front of this same town hall, I asked for help over there when I had horses and could get disease, and they could do nothing.
Thank you. Mr. Tyler.
This
is on Mr. Coe's motion.
It absolutely is. Yes, I'd like to argue defeat of his motion for the following reason. Mr. Gish suggested that, in fact, we are provided an assessment from mosquito control which covers the needs, and it's been my understanding quite the contrary, that we tell them what we're willing to give them, and then they provide the services that we contract for and in the amount of the services. That is to say that $39,000 buys us a certain amount of mosquito control. If we pay another $15,000, we'll get a lot more. And notwithstanding the problems with the federal government being a very poor neighbor in this regard, which I acknowledge, the fact is that in many areas of Sudbury, they're not bound by those restrictions. And in the normal course of things, mosquitoes don't range quite that far. They don't fly from the east part of Sudbury all the way to the west part of Sudbury. They probably fly to my yard, so it may not help me, but it's going to help a lot of other people.
Ms. Gardner.
James Gardner, Longfellow Road. Mr. Moderator, on the motion in the second degree, if I understood Mr. Coe correctly, his intent was to take the initial amendment of $30,000 in both places and replace it with a pair of amendments, each for $15,000, one to be considered in the spirit of mosquito control, one to be considered in the spirit of hazardous waste. Perhaps I misunderstood Mr. Coe.
Maybe we hang on a second. Is Mr. Coe here? You care to answer the question?
That was the way I originally intended the motion, but after the discussion between yourself and the town council, that's not the way I made the motion. I made the motion to decrease the amount to $15,000, and then I made the point in support of the motion that I thought that the mosquito case was not compelling and that the hazardous waste case was, and that leaves the $15,000 for the hazardous waste. That was the sense of my motion.
Thank you. Are we prepared to vote on that motion to amend? Okay. Now, just to clarify, we're going to vote on the amendment before you. This is an amendment to the motion to amend. Okay, we will first vote on this, on Mr. Coe's motion to amend Mr. Tyler's motion to amend. So, it's moved to increase human services by $15,000 and to decrease 900 unclassified by $15,000. Is that correct, Mr. Coe? Okay. All those in favor of Mr. Coe's motion to amend on the view graph, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? We're going to have a standing count. Hang on a minute. Hang on. We're not going to count. I just want you to stand instead of sitting. All those in favor of Mr. Coe's motion to amend, please rise and hold your cards high. Thank you. Be seated, please. All those opposed to Mr. Coe's motion to amend, please rise. Yeah, I see it as a clear majority in favor of Mr. Coe's motion. Thank you. I heard you, Mr. Tyler, and I heard nowhere else. You may be seated. The motion passes. We will now go on to Mr. Tyler's motion. Remembering that we passed Mr. Coe's motion, we are now on Mr. Tyler's motion. Can we see that on the view graph? See that? As amended.
No.
Excuse me. So this is, as we see it again, this is Mr. Tyler's motion as amended. I see no discussion. All those in
Excuse me? All those in favor of Mr. Tyler's motion to amend as amended, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Okay, we're going to take another standing count. Please put your cards down. All those in favor of Mr. Tyler's motion to amend as amended, please rise and hold your cards high. Thank you. All those opposed to Mr. Tyler's motion? I'm going to try it one more time. Please be seated. All those in favor of Mr. Coe's motion, please rise and hold your cards up. Excuse me. Mr. Tyler's, all those in favor of Mr. Tyler's motion as amended, please rise and hold your cards up. Thank you. All those opposed, please rise. Thank you. It is reasonably close. I count about 30 more votes, roughly speaking, in favor than opposed, roughly 120 to 90. I'm not sure how close that is, but in viewing the hall that second time, that's how I see it. If you'd like to call for a vote, a head count, we can do that. Not hearing seven voters, we'll declare it as passed. We are now on 600, Culture and Recreation. Any questions on Culture and Recreation? Mr. Tyler.
Did we finish Human Services?
Yes, we did.
So nobody else has an opportunity to discuss anything else in the budget? I mean, of Human Services? I talked about the first item, which was Board of
Mr.
Health.
Mr. Tyler, do you have anything on Human Services?
Yeah, I actually do.
Go right ahead.
I make a motion that we add $75,000 to the Council on Aging general expense, and we subtract $75,000 from the reserve fund.
Before we get a second, can you hang on a minute, please? Mr. Tyler, as I tried to explain before, I can't permit this motion. If you want to change this motion to add $75,000 to Human Services 500 and to reduce 75 from 900, I will accept that motion.
Right. I apologize. I'm not used to this idea that we don't understand where the money is going to.
Right.
I'd like to move that we add $75,000 to Human Services, parentheses, not part of the motion, Council on Aging General Expense, and subtract from Department 900, is it?
Yes, 900.
The, quote, otherwise unaccounted for.
Unclassified.
Unclassified slush funds, $75,000.
Does that motion receive a second, not the part that's in parentheses? Do I see a second? I do. Mr. Tyler.
We've again, I'd like to emphasize this motion is not cutting anybody else's programs. It's reserve funds that every year we get money back from these various accounts. So this is just something that needs to be spent. And let me try and simply make the case. You've been hearing for a few years a little bit about Sudbury senior citizens and the fact that they are all paying huge tax bills and getting few services from the town's budget. In fact, if you look at your warrant, you'll see that the services specifically targeted for those senior citizen households in town total a paltry $135,588. Shameful. Shameful on this town. Senior citizens as a group, those 65 and older, when we did our studies last year in fiscal year 2003, we counted there were about 904 properties contributing over $5.8 million in tax revenues to the town. And if you were to subtract the roughly $2,100 in kind of town expenses, snow plowing, public service, everything else that each property gets, you'd see that they pay about $4 million into the surplus of the town going for everyone else's consumption expenditures. So I'm suggesting that just to give the senior citizens a little carrot, maybe you might want to hang around a little bit more, but maybe we could do a little bit more for them in our senior center. Just instead of spending $135,588, spend $210,588 out of the $3,990,328 that they contribute to this town, and I think they deserve maybe about what would that be, about a 0.5% of that back? Or is it 5%? I guess it's 5%. About 5% of that back. So I urge support of this motion. I think that if they were given the resources, there's no doubt in my mind that there are many needs that the senior, that the Council on Aging could figure out that the seniors could well benefit from the expenditure of $75,000. Be that for outreach workers to reach those who are homebound, providing perhaps more programs and support for them, perhaps more meal programs for those that are really destitute because they're paying, in some cases, over 100% of their incomes for property taxes, or maybe they're the lucky ones that are only paying 70% of their incomes for property taxes. So as I said before, I think it's a small price to pay for a group of citizens who we might, in fact, all want to encourage to stay and remain in Sudbury. I urge your support for this motion.
Thank you. Is anybody else warm here? Yes? Get used to it. We're going to be meeting until July. Mrs. Coe.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. First question. Is this what we used to call the reserve fund?
It still is.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. When I was a newspaper reporter in the late 1970s, I covered the FinCom for about a year, maybe 2 years. At that time, the reserve fund was $100,000 to start. And it was the big energy crisis. And the schools ran out of oil to heat the buildings. Now, those of you who are my age remember when we sent our kids to school in jackets because the reserve fund head did not have enough money to pay for the oil for the schools. The reserve fund is for emergencies. And as I say, I look at this, it's 150, we've taken 15,000 out of it already, and 25 years ago, it was 100 to start. I'm not sure this is a good idea.
Mr. Moderator.
Thank you.
Can we speak?
And Mrs. McPenion.
Thank you. What Mrs. Coe said was correct. What we've successfully done in the last article, the last amendment, was to take $15,000 out of our reserve fund transfer, which is used for snow and ice emergencies. legal expenses, which we will be incurring, which we typically incur. As a matter of fact, the board has just decided to enter into an appeal on behalf of the Hot Brook. That money would have been used for that or will be used for that. If any of our emergency vehicles break down, we need to use it for that. Or if there are any boiler problems in town, we need to use it for that. That's been reduced by $15,000. We would urge, the board would urge your support, your non-support of this amendment and other amendments at toying with the operating budget of this town that these people have worked so hard and been so thorough in the finance debates and in finance discussions. All we are asking you to do is consider them. When you start moving money around, however, there are unintended consequences, and Mr. Tyler, I know you're aware of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wallace?
Marge Wallace, 148 Knobscot Road. Having spent countless years on the Finance Committee and being a senior citizen, I have to urge you to defeat this amendment. It is not well thought out. There is no plan for what the senior citizen budget should increase should be used for. We certainly do know from what Kirsten has said and what Martha has said, the reserve fund is a vital piece of the budget that must be preserved for the kinds of emergencies that we just never can anticipate. I urge you to defeat the amendment. And let's move on.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road.
You can put the mic, push it up to it.
All right.
You can put it out.
So, contingencies are obviously important, and I hope we can keep the seniors in the community. I'm dumbfounded by what happened last week. But I urge you to defeat this motion on principle. I don't believe town meeting is the time to be going through each and every line item when it's been so thoroughly researched. There have been hearings on things. This is really well prepared. And to sit here now in this body and go over things, who knows what's going to come next if this passes. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Joe Bowles, 50 Pratts Mill Road, also a member of the Council on Aging. This was not proposed to us at all, so we have nothing to do with this. We thank Mr. Tyler for his effort. However, the Council would definitely recommend that we do not approve this amendment.
Thank you. Did I hear a call of the question before? Is there a second? All those in favor of calling the question, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It passes by more than two-thirds. You have in front of you the motion to amend to increase human services by $75,000, decrease 900 unclassified by $75,000. All those in favor of the motion to amend, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? There's no need to stand up. It's overwhelmingly defeated. We are now on 600, culture and recreation. Mr. Tyler.
You know, I was going to make a motion, and I guess I'm persuaded that the hall is getting fair.
Yes.
But, so I won't, but I'm going to make a comment. And I hope that the management of this town and the management of the library will take this as an honest suggestion from a user and patron, a frequent user of the library. To me, spending five times as much on staff as you spend on books doesn't make sense. People go to libraries to get materials that they can take out. And I think that we've just misallocated the budget if, in fact, we decide that it's $813,230, that's all we want to spend for the library. I think we should figure out ways that we can staff the library with fewer people because we've got all those TV cameras there, keep the same hours, and buy more books.
Hang on with the point of order, please. Are you almost done, Mr. Tyler?
I think I have 5 minutes. Am I right?
Excuse me? I just asked you if you were almost done. I didn't ask you how much time you had left.
Well, I was getting there, but I kind of lost my train of thought, so I might think of something.
What is your point of order? Excuse me, there's one person who has the floor, please. Yes, ma'am.
I think she's right, so I will make the motion.
Hang on, Mr. Tyler. Tyler, you want to change the words of this motion again?
Yes, I will. I will on the fly. I'd like to add $75,000 to culture and recreation, parentheses, and I part of the motion to be used for library books and materials, and to subtract $75,000 from a 900 reserve account, not the reserve fund, but in fact, if that's a pejorative to use. There's another one in there that's also
900 unclassified, Mr. Tyler.
900 unclassified. We'll call it the salary adjustment account.
No, that's in parentheses, not part of the motion.
Right,
correct?
Not part of the motion. Right.
Yes. I wish I could say yes, but I cannot. The answer is no. He has not. Mr. Tyler, is there a second to that motion? The motion is to move add $75,000 to 600 culture and recreation and subtract 75,000 from 900 unclassified. Does that motion to amend receive a second?
Help me out.
It does, Mr. Tyler.
And as I said before, I was trying to do this in a way that we might have to avoid this motion, but I guess that I wasn't able to do that. So I think the idea here is that we probably ought to be spending another $75,000 instead of spending $813,230. We ought to spend $888,230 on the library, and we should be spending roughly 75% more on materials, because it is the collection of a library that makes you want to go there. It's the collection of the library that makes us sometimes find that we have to go to the Framingham Library where they have a bigger collection, or we have to go to the Boston Public Library where they have a bigger collection, etc. So I urge that we approve this, but if we don't approve this, I urge that we give some sort of round of applause to the management of the town somehow, that they understand that we'd like to see more books and materials in the library and figure out a way that we can kind of run it with a little bit leaner staff so that we can put the money into the materials that we all want to read. Thank you.
No, just the motions are made. There's some people at the mic. Let's take a few people at the mic, and then you can move the question. Yes, Mr. Lubash.
Ivan Lubash, Barbara Road. As former chair of the Board of Trustees of the library and a nine-year member, I would love to see additional funds to the library for any and all purposes. However, we have a limited budget, limited town income, and the library has done a fantastic job living within those limits. And I think the staff has worked to the maximum capability, and in a sense, books and materials, 108,000. Move that decimal point to the right when you look at the Minuteman Library System. As a result of work done by the Board of Libraries, Goodnow Library, and others, the library has access to just about every library within the Commonwealth, whether it be public, state, or private.
Thank you, Mr. Lubash. Yes, Mr. Cole.
Mr. Moderator, inadvertently, Mr. Tyler has blundered onto a subject that I happen to know something about. As some of you know, I'm a member of the MIS department at the City of Cambridge, and I can tell you that one big reason that people go to libraries these days is to surf the web. And yes, it's important to have lots of books, but it's also important to have people there that understand computers and that can help the people that come in use them. And it's also considered it's to be a very good thing to provide computer access, internet access in libraries, because it helps to decrease the inequity between people who can afford to have computers at home and those who can't. So I think that unless Mr. Tyler wants to sashay down to the Goodnow Library and help people use the computers, that maybe the idea of having enough staff to help the people do it is a good thing.
Thank you, Ms. Goh. Barbara Pryor, the library trustee.
I also want to thank Mr. Tyler, but everybody in the town for supporting the library budget. I just want to tell you that although the number in the warrant only asks for a certain amount of money for books and materials for the library also gets a lot of support from outside sources. The state, although their budget has been cut, provides money for the book budget as well, as do the Friends of the Library, which support books and materials. I don't have the exact percentages, didn't realize that this is a specific question that would be asked of the trustees tonight. But if anyone would like to know how much outside money is provided for the book budget, we would be glad to answer that question. I'm sure that you can check with the library tomorrow. But I do want to assure you that the money that shows up in the budget is not the only money that's spent on books and materials at the library. And also, if you would like to see more about what's happening at the library, let me tell you right now that we are going to have a fifth anniversary party for the new library on May 2nd, and all of you are invited to see what we have at the library in terms of AV equipment, computers, and books. So join us then, and if you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to call either any of the trustees or the library director. He would be glad to answer them. So I urge you to defeat this amendment. Thank you.
Question has been called. Does it receive a second? All those in favor of calling the question, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Unanimous. We're now going to vote on the motion to amend to increase 600 culture and recreation by 75,000 and decrease 900 unclassified by 75,000. All those in favor of that motion to amend, please signify by raising your cards. One vote. All those opposed? It is defeated. We're now on to 900, town employee benefits. Hearing nothing on that. This is on 900. 900. Ms. Coe?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. Just a point of clarification. When Ms. Valenti gave her discussion at the beginning of the discussion of the budget, there was a point made about the percentage that employees contribute to their pensions, and there one possible interpretation of what she said was that the town is being very frugal and cutting back on the percentage that the town contributes to each employee's pension. Another possible explanation is that in fact what's happened is that the federal government has become more lenient on the amount of money that the employee can put in and shelter from taxes. Or possibly some other explanation altogether, but is one of those explanations the correct one, and if not, what is?
Ms. Valenti?
Mr. Moderator, I apologize. I should have said that's the state law requires it. All of those percentages and those dates, the town doesn't determine, the employee didn't determine, they're all set by state law.
And it's not the case that the town is contributing less to the pensions, but just that the employee is contributing more, right?
But what the town ends up contributing as a whole is what's our normal contribution, that is what we have to pay towards employees that are currently retired, plus another amount towards our unfunded liability, which by state law says we have to reduce all of our unfunded liability by 2028. What ends up paying the pensions is a contribution, a combination of employee contributions, the investment return on what the Middlesex County retirement system is generating, and then the difference. If that's not enough for that year, they turn around and ask the towns to make up. And that's why we see that fluctuation. As their investment returns have dropped dramatically, they've turned to the towns to make that up.
Well, my question wasn't addressed to any of that part of the issue at all. I just meant with respect to the fact that the point you made that employees are contributing more, a bigger percentage to their pensions, it's because they're contributing more and not that the town is contributing less. Isn't that the case?
That's correct, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Stux.
Ron Stux, 175 Nobscot Road. Just a very small nitpick or question. Why is 900 town employee benefits and unclassified? And if that's not a typo, how do you differentiate between them?
Thank you. Ms. Valente?
Just within our accounting system, it's sort of the catch-all at the end, the 900 for these variety of different costs that aren't really attributable to a specific program.
Thank you. Ms. Sharkey?
Judge Sharkey, 16 Haynes Road. As a point of clarification, I thought I heard you say, and this young lady to my left say, that an article could not be discussed other than a motion or an amendment. Would you clarify that for me?
Yes, you could, a motion, an amendment, or a question. If you have a question of the town official about you don't understand something in the budget.
You just can't get up and discuss it.
That is correct.
Can you give me any reference to that? A town meeting is an open, Sudbury is an open town meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Sarr. Hang on a minute. We'll get you an answer from town council.
Mr. Moderator, the town meeting acts on questions that are presented to them in the town warrant. Each warrant article is a question. When that question comes before the town meeting, they are free to discuss it if it gets a motion and a second. If it does not, then there's no discussion and it's passed on.
Thank you.
Mr. Moderator?
And a person is not allowed to discuss without making a motion or an amendment? I don't know of anything that pertains to that. We've always been allowed to discuss any article.
The idea, Mr. Sharkey, is try to frame it in the form of a question. If you don't wish to make a motion, try to frame it in the form of a question, and we'll get an answer for you from one of the town officials.
Can you refer me to the town meeting Bible?
The town council has given an answer. Do you have anything else to say, Mr. Sharkey? Town council has given you an answer.
He hasn't given me an answer.
Excuse me?
He hasn't given me an answer.
You may not like the answer, but he's given you an answer. Do you have a question? No, Mr. Sharkey, do you have a question?
I know we're late into the evening, but this is a procedural matter which I'm very much interested in.
I heard town council say that given our bylaws, you ask a question or you make a motion. That's what
town council point to the bylaw?
Could I clarify this a little bit?
No.
Okay. I don't want any help from Mr. Tyler.
Town meeting is controlled by actually three things. It's controlled by the general laws, Chapter 39, Sections 15 and 17, which directs the moderator to answer.
39, Sections 15 and 17.
The bylaws, Article 1 and 2 of the town bylaws, and where they do not apply, town meeting time, which is a book of procedures that has been published. Town meeting is for the purpose of discussing action on articles that have been presented in notice given to the general public.
Oh, I realize it must be within the framework.
Sharkey, please, okay. You address your questions to the chair. If someone else is speaking, you wait till he finishes speaking. He's not finished.
There are two ways to address, or for the moderator to allow someone to address questions on the floor. If they want to make a motion, and if that motion receives a second, they can discuss action under that article. If in fact you have a question, not for discussion, but a question regarding that article, the moderator will recognize you or may recognize you for that question, which either can be answered by a town official, the moderator, or perhaps someone else in the hall. Those are the only ways that you're allowed to have discussion. There is one exception to that, and that is the state of the town, which is presented by the various town boards, the finance committee, the town manager, the selectmen, and the various school committees. That has historically been done at the beginning of town meeting. That's not also a that is not a discussion.
I thought, that's right.
No, actually,
I think we've been shut off. What's the question?
Is there a second to the motion of the question? I see it. All those in favor of moving the
question? I had a question, too. Point of order.
Hang on. Yeah, I'm afraid that calling the question is out of order in the sense that we don't have any motion to amend in front of us. The only thing we have in front of us is the main motion, which we can't vote on until we do the second 900 unclassified in transfers. Mr. Tyler, did you have a point of order?
I did have a question.
Go ahead.
First of all, I raised the question earlier, which was there was no motion on the floor, and we had finance committee, and then we had the town manager and others speaking, and there was no motion. And I think Mr. Sharkey's question is, where in this process do the citizens talk about the general budget itself and get to argue about just sort of their comments on the state of the budget? And it seems like if we have 10 minutes for this town official, 10 minutes for that one, 30, 40, 50 minutes, we get the town's view. I'd like to hear Mr. Sharkey's view of the budget, to tell you the truth, and I'm hoping that somewhere you'll be able to find the courtesy to give him and others kind of their floor to talk about the budget and the state of the town in general. Because I think that this town meeting for 350 years has been by the people, for the people. We are an open town meeting. Mr. Sharkey's opinions are as valued as any town official or anyone else in this hall.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. Is there anyone else who feels like they haven't been given an opportunity to speak, given the fact that we, on Wednesday night, went through one substantive article, and tonight, after, what do we have here, 2.5 hours? We're still not finished with one substantive article. Is there anyone else who has anything to say on 900 town employee benefits? Seeing none, is there anyone who has any question or motion to amend on 900 unclassified and transfers? See, yes. Correct. Correct. Is there anyone else has any questions on 900 unclassified and transfers? Seeing none, we are now prepared to vote on the main motion as amended. All those in favor of the main motion, can we show that on the view graph, Jan? Just to clarify, in case anyone is confused, we're voting the entire budget right now.
Does this motion up on the screen include...
Mr. Tyler, you're not recognized. Does everyone understand that we are now voting on the bottom line budget as amended? Okay. All those in favor of that motion on the budget, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All those opposed? I don't. There's a few against, and it's overwhelmingly passed. Thank you. We're now on to Article 5. Recognize Selectman Drabinski for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move indefinite postponement.
Is there a second? Very good. Mr. Drabinski?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. This is a bookmarked article to examine the Landfill Enterprise Fund and see if we were going to
change to fund to add curbside pickup. We're in the process of, we've got a consultant's report here. We just received it. The board's going to go through the vetting process to see if this is something we want to do. We need to look at financial, logistical, and personnel, and then finally the process of, is this something we want to do? So we'll probably be coming back to town meeting next year with some sort of recommendation regarding curbside pickup. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the FinCom wish to make a statement?
The Finance Committee agrees to indefinitely postpone.
Thank you. Any comments on Article 5? All those in favor of indefinite postponement, please raise your cards. All those opposed? Passes overwhelmingly. We're now on to Article 6, Solid Waste Disposal Enterprise Budget. Recognize Bob Jacobson, co-chair of the FinCom, for motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $220,453 for the Solid Waste Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 2005 and further to authorize use of an additional $18,793 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs, such sums to be raised by $229,602 in receipts and $9,644 in retained earnings of the Enterprise.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? Mr. Jacobson?
The FinCom supports this motion.
Very good. Mr. Kavinsky?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen supports this article. This article continues the funding of the transfer station, the put and take and recycle center. So we hope you will support this article to keep our environment safe.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 6? Seeing none, all those in favor of Article 6 is moved. All those in favor, all those opposed? It passes unanimously. We're now on Article 7, the Pool Enterprise Fund. Recognize Mr. Jacobson of the FinCom for the motion and the presentation.
Move to appropriate the sum of $405,078 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 2005, such sum to be raised from $400,000 in receipts of the Enterprise and $5,078 in retained earnings of the Enterprise, and further to authorize use of an additional $47,186 appropriated under Article under Account 900, Town Employee Benefits in Article 4, Fiscal Year 05 Budget for Indirect Costs.
Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Mr. Jacobson, you care to make a statement?
The FinCom supports this article.
Ms. Rupinian?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 7? Yes, Mr. Holliker.
Are we to interpret that the $47,000 represents money coming out of general taxation?
The answer is yes.
Yes. Well, this is a question I seem to raise every year about the Atkins pool. We're promised that the Enterprise will come into balance, and it never seems to come quite into balance. Is there some explanation why this $47,000 could not be made up from receipts or otherwise?
Does anyone from either the Board of Selectmen or Town Manager or FinCom wish to answer that question? Raise your hand, please. Ms. Valenti.
The Recreation Director and Recreation Commission have been working very, very diligently to put in place enhanced programming and activities to generate additional receipts and revenues to the Atkinson Pool. However, at this point, while they're covering all of their direct expenses, our best estimate is they still are not generating enough to cover the indirect. So we are put the articles put together so that those benefits, the benefits for the employees who work in that pool, will be covered under the general fund, under that particular use of the line 900, cover the benefits along with all the other town employees.
Thank you. Any other comments on Article 7 before we move to a vote? Mr. Holliker?
Just a very quick question. Is it likely that next year the actives pool will be in balance, finally?
Ms. Valenti?
What can we expect?
It's hard for me to expect make a guess at this point. Again, that's the goal. That is the goal that they are working for.
Thank you. I see no further, no one further at the microphone. We'll call for a vote on Article 7. All those in favor of Article 7, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All those opposed? It's overwhelmingly passed. We're now going to move on to Article 8, the capital budget. Call upon Kerry Spidell, the finance director, to make both the motion and a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. Move to appropriate the sum of $169,000 for 1, purchase of a chipper for the Public Works Department, 2, purchase and installation of a diving board for the Atkinson Pool, 3, remodeling, reconstructing, and making extraordinary repairs to the Fire Department headquarters, consisting of the installation of an air exchange system, 4, purchase of a 3/4-ton truck for the Department of Public Works, 5, purchase of a bucket truck for the Fire Department, 6, remodeling, reconstructing, and making extraordinary repairs to town buildings, 7, purchase of a backhoe for the Department of Public Works, and 8, purchase of a dresser loader for the Department of Public Works, said sum to be raised by a transfer of $25,000 from unexpended proceeds of the town's municipal purpose loan of 1997 bonds, such proceeds relating to the portion of such bonds issued pursuant to the vote of the town passed April 4, 1995, under Article 19, for the purpose of constructing an addition and or renovating and making extraordinary repairs to the Goodnow Library, and the balance to be raised by taxation.
Does that receive a second? It does. Yes, Carrie.
I am here this evening to present the capital article on behalf of the Capital Improvements Planning Committee, or known as the CIPC. The Capital Committee is a 7-member board comprised of citizens appointed by the Board of Selectmen, Town Manager, and the Finance Committee. Committee members include Chairman David Wallace, Pat Kinney, Ted Pascarello, Dan Messina, Jose Garcia-Mateen, Bob Herstack, and Skip Heaps. The Capital Planning Bylaw requires the Capital Committee to annually review the town's short and long-term capital needs and to annually prepare a 1-year capital budget and a multi-year capital plan. The town bylaw defines capital items as equipment, projects, and or improvements that have a useful life of at least 5 years and have a single year cost of $10,000. In September 2003, the town manager issued CIP instructions to all town departments, boards, and committees. Requests for capital funding were due back in early October. 29 items were submitted for funding in fiscal 05, totaling $1,357,200. The staff committee met in mid-October to prioritize the items submitted. Documentation on all items, as well as the staff priority list, was forwarded to the Capital Committee in November 2003. The Capital Committee met in late November and early December to review all requests and prepare recommendations for capital funding. Their request was forwarded to the Finance Committee for incorporation into the FY05 funding scenario in mid-December. The following is the recommendation of the Capital Improvement Planning Committee for funding for fiscal 2005. The recommendation may be found on page 7 of your warrant. Item 1, $7,500 for the first year of a multi-year lease purchase for the Department of Public Works to replace Unit 29, a 1979 Mitzmerald chipper. Total estimated purchase price is $35,000. Replacement of this item is in accordance with the fleet maintenance plan. Item 2, $8,000 for the Atkinson Pool to replace 2 springboard and 1 16-foot diving board and all necessary hardware. Equipment is 5 years old and receives heavy usage.
Ms. Spidell, can we assume that all these items that are recommended are part of the long-range program?
Yes, they are.
Right. Does the hall need to hear all the details? Because it's as printed in the warrant.
That's
Thank you. Marty Raganes from the FinCom.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
That's recommends approval, did I hear you say?
Yes.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen urge your support for this article for necessary repairs, replacement, and safety issues with town buildings and accoutrements.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions of the Capital Committee? Yes.
I have two questions. The first is, what happens if next year the town doesn't vote another $7,500 and we've already committed to a lease purchase? That's the first question. The second question is, I understand of item number five, the bucket truck. This is the thing that they use to maintain the telegraph system of reporting fires, I believe. That is the red wires that are up on all the poles that in the days before telephones, they decided that they'd make this kind of system where they have these pole things. And I think I'd heard Chief Dunn tell me, maybe tell this hall at one time, but I know I've heard it said that there's been maybe nobody has ever used one of those to call the fire department in memory. And perhaps I'm wrong about that, but it just seems that if we're at a point of needing a new truck, this might be a time to really consider, is this wired technology of a basically something that all it tells you is a lever was pulled at this location. It doesn't give you voice communication. It's just a yes or no, a lever was called, send out the trucks. Is this a system that is perhaps gone the way of the buggy and the horse whip and all those things that we no longer fund in the town budget?
Thank you. I see the fire chief's going to answer our question on that last question. Fire Chief Mike Dunn, you are permitted to cheer when he comes to the microphone because this will be the last time.
I have less than 3 weeks to go. My replacement is sitting over there tonight, Captain Ken McLean. Mr. Tyler is correct. We have been removing the fire alarm boxes from the neighborhoods and off the streets of Sudbury over the past few years. They don't get used a lot. What the system also maintains, though, are the fire alarm boxes that are on most commercial buildings in town and on all the municipal buildings in town. And that saves a lot of money through insurance purposes for those companies and for the town. We also bill all the companies that have fire alarm boxes that are connected to the town system, and we do bring in money. So we'll actually pay for this truck in 3 or 4 years. We're not asking for a new one. We're asking to buy a used vehicle, the one we presently have. We bought used from Danvers Power and Light. It's getting old, so we do plan to buy another used truck. But that's about what it's for. There's some other issues that get used in the fire alarm truck. It gets used by other town agencies. Park and Rec uses it from time to time for us, from us. And that's about it, unless there's another question for me.
Thank you. We'll miss you, Mike. Ms. Fidel, with an answer to the first question about the chipper replacement?
I believe the first question was what happens if in year two or in a subsequent year of a lease purchase, what happens if town meeting does not appropriate that amount? Mr. Tyler is correct. Under a lease purchase agreement, it is subject to annual appropriation by town meeting. As a result, we pay a slightly higher interest rate than we would if we were just to borrow the money for a group of projects or for equipment purchases. We do enter into lease purchasing because it is a much more affordable way for us to maintain our equipment at this point in time, and we do, once we receive approval through the capital process in year one, we then move the lease purchase payments into the operating budget with the understanding that town meeting has given a tacit approval for those projects, even though they do require annual appropriation.
Thank you. The printed in the warrant is that a two-thirds vote is required if borrowed. There will be no borrowing, so this will be a majority vote. Seeing no other comments, all those in favor of Article 8, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. Thank you. We move to Article 9, Selectman Rupinian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to indefinitely postpone consideration of Article 9.
To receive a second. It does. Ms. Rupinian?
Thank you.
We are only going to make adjustments at the town meeting if necessary, and we do not have any adjustments that are required at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the FinCom care to make a statement?
The Finance Committee supports the move to indefinitely postpone.
Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Seeing none. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. We're now on to Article 10. Carrie Spiedel.
Move to indefinitely postpone consideration of Article 10.
Is there a second? There is. Yes.
We're requesting indefinite proposed postponement because there are no unpaid bills for town meeting action.
Wonderful. That's wonderful news. I take it neither the selectmen nor the FinCom need to make a statement. Great. Anybody else care to make a statement? All those in favor of indefinitely postponing, signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. We are now on Article 11, the Stabilization Fund. Ms. Rupinian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to indefinitely postpone consideration of Article 11.
Is there a second? There is. Yes.
Okay, thank you. With the budget situation, given all of the cuts that have already been made, the board felt that it is in the town's best interest at this time to forego putting money into this fund for the upcoming fiscal year. It is our hope and our intention to resume such an allocation in the future. And just to mention, our stabilization fund was one key element that was recognized and mentioned in our AAA credit rating. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the FinCom wish to make a statement?
The FinCom supports this move to indefinitely postpone.
The warrant says that if we're voting on the motion on the stabilization fund, it requires a two-thirds vote. We are not. We're voting on a motion to indefinitely postpone, which merely requires a majority. Anybody wish to be heard? I see none. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone? In favor. Thank you. All those opposed? It passes, it looks like, unanimously. Article 12, street acceptance. Ms. Rupinian for motion and a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to accept the layout of the following ways: Twillingate Lane from Hudson Road to a dead end, a distance of 465 feet, more or less. Spruce Lane from Hudson Road to a dead end, a distance of 420 feet, more or less. Camper Down Lane, extension from the end of the public way of Camper Down Lane to a dead end, a distance of 420 feet, more or less, as laid out by the Board of Selectmen in accordance with the descriptions and plans on file in the Town Clerk's office to authorize the acquisition by purchase, by gift, or by taking by eminent domain in fee simple of the property shown on said plans and to appropriate the sum of $825 for expenses in connection therewith.
Does it receive a second? It does. Yes, Ms. Rupinian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The selectmen have voted our intention to approve the layout of these roads and held a public hearing for this purpose prior to town meeting. If the above streets are voted and accepted by this town meeting as public ways, all future maintenance and repair will be done by the town. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the FinCom wish to make a statement?
The FinCom takes no position on this article.
Thank you. Street acceptance, a member of the planning board wish to make a statement? The planning board recommends approval and wishes you to know that they're holding a bond in case any of these streets are not finished. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 12? Seeing none. All those in favor, please signify by raising your hand. All those opposed. Requires a two-thirds vote, and I see that it's unanimous. We're moving on to Article 13, which is the Flynn Building Elevator. Ms. Rupinian to make a motion and the presentation.
Mr. Moderator, just want to let you know that this is a presentation, and considering the hour, we wanted to make sure that you're aware of the presentation.
I am aware of it. Thank you.
Get the slides.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Article 13, move to appropriate the sum of $30,000 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee for the purpose of augmenting funds currently available for the installation of an elevator and constructing an elevator access at the Flynn Building for handicapped accessibility, said sum to be raised by transfer from unexpended proceeds from the town's municipal purpose loan of 1997 bonds, such as proceeds relating to a portion of such bonds issued pursuant to the vote of the town passed April 4, 1995, under Article 19 for the purpose of constructing an addition and or renovating and making extraordinary repairs to the Goodnow Library.
Does that receive a second? It does. Yes, Ms. Rapinian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Article 13 is an article that we've actually visited several times over the past 5 years. Do you have the slides? Thank you very much. The first slide in building. Thank you. This article references the Flynn Building, and let me give you a little bit of background on this building. It's located, for some of you who don't know, right in front of the Peter Noyes Elementary School. It has been used for town offices since 1970, and formerly the Flynn Building was used as a school built in 1890. The problem the town has had with the Flynn is one of the American with Disabilities Act compliance. This building has not and is not in compliance with that law that states that we must have handicapped accessible routes in any municipal building. The Flynn has yet to be updated. It needs an elevator, it needs restrooms with handicapped facilities, and an entrance ramp. This project has had monies appropriated since FY 1999. The amount was $224,000, and that was passed at a previous town meeting in two different articles. The Permanent Building Committee, who oversees municipal projects, rejected the previous bid as too expensive and exceeding available funds. This past fall and winter, a new design was proposed, and the bid came in closer to their expectations. Thank you. The proposal for accessibility is as follows. First, to add an elevator, to create a new handicap accessible building entrance, and to bring the bathrooms to ADA standards. From the bids that have been received, we believe that the project will be around total $254,000. Tonight, we are asking town meeting to allow a transfer of $30,000 from an older article. The project is scheduled to be completed in the summer of 2004. We are asking in this article the town to finally finish what we've been committed to doing, making this building accessible at a reasonable cost. The source of the $30,000 is a transfer from Article 19 of the 1995 annual town meeting library construction. This is where this additional money would come from. When the state grant for Sudbury came in for our library at that time, it was more than it was initially expected. So the funds that the town appropriated for the library had already been borrowed, and we can't give it back. We can only use it for other purposes. This money cannot be used for operating purposes, only for a similar type of borrowing project. This article is an appropriate use of those funds. In Article 8, $25,000 of the money was appropriated under a capital budget article. Slide 5. Thank you. The Permanent Building Committee, who oversees these municipal projects, is a very hard-working group. The unusual conditions of working with an old building creates many unknowns. The committee used their best judgment in continuing to seek a solution for compliance with a budget appropriate for the town. They have proposed a cost-effective way to address this issue before legal action is taken against our town. The PBC has worked on all of the school projects, all five, and the new DPW building, and they should be commended for their dedication. And what they are, again, I repeat, a very hard-working group of individuals, and they've been with us for quite a long time. The master facility study, this is about the, the future of the Flynn building. A lot of people ask what's going to happen there. The master facility study was completed in spring of 2002 and lays out several scenarios for addressing the town's facilities and space needs. In all scenarios, the Flynn Building is to continue to be utilized for municipal purposes. Exactly who will go into the Flynn Building is still uncertain. However, this long-term planning will be undertaken after the police station situation is addressed.
Currently, there are 5 municipal offices in the building, and some offices in the upstairs are currently vacant. The town manager is looking to get town staff located into the same building and is overseeing a process to finalize those decisions. It is likely that in the short term, the town manager, the staff in the parsonage, and town council will move to the Flynn building after the elevator is installed. This work on the Flynn building has been on hold for some time. We now have a bid in line with the recommendations of the PBC, so that the time to accomplish this project is now, before the other town staff actually move over there. Most importantly, we are required to comply by the law. To wait any longer is unnecessary, so we urge you to allow us to finish the Flynn building project and support this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson, the Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee supports this article.
Does the Capital Improvement Committee wish to make a presentation? Are they all set? Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on this? Yes, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I support this, but I just had a question. When we discussed this a couple years ago, I thought there were issues of safety in this building raised, and I just wondered if someone could share a bit of the process as how was decided to proceed with the ADA compliance relative to safety issues, unless I'm just misremembering this.
Thank you. Ms. Valente.
I wasn't here for when that discussion happened, but my study of the document shows the safety issues had to do with the extremely heavy documents and equipment that the engineering department had on the second floor, so that was a structural problem. They've now been relocated to the new DPW, so we would have ordinary staff and activities going on in there. Why Mr. Kinnion talked about for the longer term, I believe that we're going to have to really look at the building if we're going to be continuing to use it and bring it up to some modern other issues. But it will be structurally sound enough for everyday use for our kind of staff to come over and use it. And we think over the long term we will probably address some of those, you know, what properly belongs there. We have a variety of issues to look at, but that's my understanding on that particular safety issue.
Thank you. Mr. Tober?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, if I have understood this article well, and if I have read the report of the Board of Selectmen well, you are dealing here with a contractor who is keenly aware of the fact that your hands are tied by the Americans, what is it, some do-gooder purpose, and your hands are tied, and he's going to use it. The very fact that he wants to keep reserves and reserve funds is a signal to him that he can go for more, and he will. I urge that we vote down this article, because there will be no end to extortion.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 13? Yes.
Kirsten Van Dyke, 37 Landham Road. 5 years of town meeting to try to get this act passed through. The diligent work has been done. It's time to comply today. It's overdue. We can organize a town office space into one large, centrally located building while abiding by the law. I urge support of this article.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
First, I'm Steve Murphy, Willis Road. I'm in support of this article, but I have a question. These funds are not from a reserve fund, as I understood from the explanation. They are from monies already allocated for buildings of this kind of purpose. So if they're not expended on this, eventually they need to be expended, or they're wasting assets of the town.
Correct. Yes.
Yes. No need to call the question. There are no other ones who want to speak, so we'll just go right. The question has been called. Is there a second? All those in favor of the call of the question, please signify, raise your hand. All those opposed, it's unanimous. We're now moving on to Article 13. All those in favor of Article 13, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. With the indulgence of the hall, it is after 10:30. Our bylaw says that if you wish to stay any longer, we need a two-thirds vote. Do you wish to go on to the article about the police station? All those in favor of going forward with the police station article, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Do I hear a motion to adjourn until tomorrow at 7:30? Is there a second? All those in favor? All those opposed? Thank you and good night.